is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run!
Fires down the middle.
It is intercepted by Micah Hyde! Intercepted! Tre Day! Tre'Davious White!
He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there! McCoy cuts to the right.
Outrunning everybody! 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Good afternoon. Happy holidays, everybody. Welcome to One Bills Drive at our One Buffalo studio. It is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, along with Steve Tasker, in today for the vacationing Donald Jones. Chris Brown joins us as well for this first segment to talk about practice, which is ongoing on the other side. Happy holidays, everybody. Welcome to the show on this Wednesday of Christmas week, Wednesday, December 27th. I think you call this Christmas week, right?
That's yeah. What? I was weird because I was here yesterday, and right. Brownie and I were in different chairs. We were switched.
You're in the big boy chair now.
I am. Yeah. Well, I'm the big now. What does that say about Brownie now and where I usually am,
you can
right?
read into whatever you like.
I guess I can.
Oh, you are the co-host. That's the official co-host chair. And awesome. Brownie is simply an appendage here.
And an honored guest.
An honored guest.
Split wide left here. Yes, that's right.
Yes. Happy to have you with us here. If you're listening today, hope you're enjoying the holidays. Many of you, of course, at home, hopefully watching on the television side on our MSG simulcast or listening as you drive around, perhaps, on WGR Sports Radio 550. Steve and I here until 3 o'clock. Brownie joins us now. We hope to get a player off the practice field around 1 o'clock, and we'll have Thurman Thomas coming up today on the telephone line a little bit later on today. We'll hear from Tyrod Taylor and LeSean McCoy after practice today. The Wednesday of practice week, the first day of the practice week as the Bills took Christmas and Tuesday off. And Chris, it struck me, and Steve, I want you to get in on this as well, how as the season rolls along, and this is fairly typical, teams, it seems to me, spend less and less actual time on the practice field, right? They kind of taper things off a little bit. We see that.
Well, we know they've for the last 3 weeks, they've already scrapped the walkthrough right. sessions that they usually have, which is why these practice sessions are now moved up to earlier in the day. I would like to think the coaches believe their players kind of have things down in terms of assignments and execution and things of that nature. And, you know, maybe to a certain extent you can apply this statistic also. Penalties are down for this team over the last 4 weeks, due in part to the fact that, you know, their execution is probably a little bit tighter than maybe it was the first month of the season. I know that's not the only reason, but you know, repetition helps, and, you know, at this point in the season, you've gone through so many dang reps from all the way back right. in May to training yeah, camp to preseason to now. I mean, if you don't have it now.
Yeah, you know, you're not installing anything. Yeah. I mean, this is all about, you know, getting making sure you know what you're going to call in which situations. I think it's a lot of it is about healing up, Murph, I think, giving guys rest. Yeah. And the less they're on their feet, don't think that just because they're not on the practice field, they're not doing stuff. They're busy. They got them watching film. They're doing extra meetings. They're, you know, having more conversations. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of people don't realize. And it was this way when I played, and I'm sure it's even more so now. In fact, I'm positive it is. NFL players spend, and this is why college graduates, guys who graduate with their degree in it and get it in the NFL, they last longer because you spend more time in a classroom setting in the NFL than you do in the weight room or on the practice field. It's just the way it is.
So let's talk, before we talk to some of the trends, Chris, that you obviously keep an eye on, some of the roster moves from yesterday, I want to ask about today's practice and the kind of the injury update. We heard from Sean McDermott at 9:30 this morning, giving us the rundown of who's in, who's out. The two critical ones, it seems to me, are first and foremost Kelvin Benjamin, who they've kind of had on a schedule now of not getting a whole lot of work in.
Yeah, this is it's purely a maintenance type thing. I don't think they want him pounding on that knee, which is going to probably need to get scoped at the end of the year. So just kind of sit him today, work him in a limited fashion Thursday, probably limited fashion Friday, so he's ready to play on Sunday. And I think that's worked relatively well for them so long as he doesn't aggravate the knee in the course of a game. That happened in the Colts game. It made the next week slow in terms of coming back. It made it a longer curve to travel, so to speak. And then after that next game, which I believe was Miami, he got through that game okay, was able to kind of maintain, you know, what he's able to do on that knee and practiced on a limited basis and got through, you know, that game okay. And we saw what he did against the Patriots, probably his best game front to back in a Bills uniform. So you hope that can continue this week in an all too important game down in Miami.
Yeah, and I, you know, people, because he plays that outside and he's a new player and he's actually a very good player. I mean, people, he draws a lot of attention. But believe me, you go down the roster, every guy on the roster is dragging around some sort of luggage.
Yeah,
you know, a sore wrist, sore shoulder, sore knee, sore ankle. You name it. Everybody on the roster's got stuff like that, and you kind of notice it with a guy like Benjamin because. You know, they get a chance to show their athleticism every play. Offensive lineman, you'll never know if he's got a sore wrist or a sore knee.
Can I say this about Benjamin, too? And actually, this is more of a comment about Tyrod Taylor. You know, when we talk, there's so much examination of Tyrod's game and where he's at and where he's going and what his ceiling is. And it's been like that way, as it will be for most quarterbacks. But it's been like that way since he came here as a starter. One thing I've learned this season about Tyrod Taylor is that it takes him a little while to get the trust and confidence of the guys at the outside terminals, which you might be able to say about many quarterbacks, but I think we saw the last couple of weeks, especially at Foxborough last Sunday, Tyrod Taylor finally trusting that he can put the ball up for grabs with Kelvin Benjamin and trust that he'll come down with it. The same, I think, can be said for Deontay Thompson. I was looking today. Last Sunday was just the fifth time that Tyrod and Thompson have been starters together, just the third time that Tyrod and Kelvin Benjamin have been starters in the same game this season. I think it was pretty evident that Tyrod, there were a couple of passes that he just put up, that knowing that Benjamin can get them, no one else can, and that is right. A positive development.
Yeah, I mean, the Deontay Thompson thing, I think I was of the opinion that that chemistry would manifest itself a little bit quicker only because they had a history together in Baltimore. And the way they were talking, it's like, oh, yeah, we're right back on the same page. It's like getting back on a bike. So I don't know, maybe I was misled by those comments thinking, oh, these guys are just going to snap it back into place and it's going to be good to go. But I guess in a different scheme, perhaps that compromises that on-field chemistry that they were talking about. It's clear he trusts Charles Clay. And at the beginning of the season, he trusted Charles Clay and not too many other people.
Right.
Because they had spent the most time on the field, you know, 25 games together over the past two-plus seasons. So, you know, yeah, it does take time. You understand why. I think Tyrod, and people might be surprised to hear this, but I think he's a conservative quarterback by nature. I mean, he'll take the chance downfield every once in a while, but I think his conservative approach is rooted in the turnover at receiver in part. Yeah. And until he has a base of knowledge about what that receiver can do for him, the spots where he feels he can trust him most, he's not going to execute those plays in a game until he has a firm grasp of what he knows he can do through reps and practice.
Yeah, I think one of the things, too, Tyrod falls into the you know, scope of is, no question, he has to really trust players. He is a conservative quarterback. You can tell that in his turnover ratio. The guy just doesn't take chances with the football. I think one of the things is that contributes to that, whether it's a positive or negative, you can take your pick, is he trusts his legs more than he trusts his arm. And his accuracy of his arm. If the window's not there for him, he trusts his legs more than he trusts his ability to hit the small window with his arm. That's why he doesn't throw it into tight places. That's all why he doesn't get picked off. He trusts other parts of his game more than he trusts the accuracy of his arm. Now, if you get a guy like Benjamin, and we're starting to see it, as you just mentioned, with these guys, he's saying, well, okay, now I he's proven to me that if I put it in the neighborhood, he's going to come down with it.
What is that catch radius? It's like it's like a condor. It's like throwing a condor
it's
out
unbelievable.
There.
And it's high, too. And it's high. So, and plus, which is great because, you know, Benjamin's 6'6", plus you put his arms over his head and give him a little, you know, he's 7 feet in the air. That's an easy target to throw at, even if you feel like you don't want it to get picked off, because it's way above everybody else. You know, you don't mind throwing it high away from everybody. And if Benjamin if it's in that radius where he can get to it, that's a throw Tyrod feels like he can make without risking an interception.
If there's any area of his game where he is not shy about being conservative, it's those downfield routes, because I think he feels confident that he can be accurate on long routes and drop things over a guy's shoulder, and the risk isn't as great, particularly if the guy's behind the corner and the safety. Because if you miss on an overthrow, not, you know, and that's usually where he misses on those deep routes. If he doesn't hit the guy in stride, it's long. It's almost never short because, again, the fear of that turnover comes
in. Well, I think one of the things, too, when you're on the long ball, it presents itself.
Yeah.
You know, so it's there. You see it. He's got to step on the guy, and that's, you know, we've always said Tyrod needs to see it before he throws it. He doesn't throw it knowing it's going to be there in a half a second or quarter of a second. And that's what, and the deep ball lends itself to that being being that kind of throw.
So we talked about Benjamin. You said he was mostly on the side today. He might come as a limited.
Probably
or
limited tomorrow.
Today.
I don't think he's going to be listed as doing anything today.
And the other one that is of consequence, I believe, is cornerback E.J. Gaines, who, again, missed a game last week. The Bills are 7-3 when E.J. Gaines is in the starting lineup. He seemed to be getting a little bit more work today than we had seen recently.
Yeah, and they were going through some station drills during individual position group setting, and I was encouraged by seeing him plant and drive off that left knee. It's not all the way back yet, but he at least feels comfortable putting weight on it. His explosion off his left knee isn't the same as it is off his right knee just yet, but positive strides there for sure, because last week he was hesitant to even put his full body weight on that one leg. So it looks like, you know, the athletic trainers and he have been working on it through the course of this past weekend when he didn't play. And that's going to be an important guy this week, because we don't know what Sharice Wright's situation is, knowing he's still in the concussion protocol. Could he come out of it late this week? Yes, but he could still be in it come Saturday, Sunday, and then he's not available. And you really get shorthanded quick, because now you're talking about, you know, guys like Lafayette Pitts and the other kid who just got added to the roster last week.
Breon
Borders, yeah.
Yeah, the interesting thing.
I had the first name, you had the last.
That's right. Thank you.
when you go out and practice for a guy like E.J. Gaines today, it's, you know, what can he do today? And if he does everything and feels pretty good, that's great. The question is, what's he going to feel like tomorrow?
Yeah.
And if he has a setback or if it turns into no go, then you might find out a lot tomorrow. Plus, if he comes back and he feels good and great, and then he's got more confidence to come back and play hard tomorrow again. And if you can do that 2 days in a row and not have any setbacks, then all of a sudden you're thinking, like, yeah, I'm in. But I think a lot of it has to do with what happens after the practice today.
John Murphy with Steve Tasker co-hosting today. Chris Brown in studio with us for a couple of moments, talking about his observations from the ongoing practice here at One Bills Drive. Chris, I thought it was interesting. We were both at Sean McDermott's 9:30 a.m. news conference, where the preponderance of questions were end-of-season questions about Kyle Williams' role on the team and his career. And I just thought to myself, there's a game coming up on Sunday that means an awful lot. Question about the Dolphins this week.
Nothing about the Dolphins. There were some questions, you know, about how making the playoffs and what it would mean for a guy like Kyle, who's kind of been battling away here for a dozen years. And this is the first time in his career he's actually playing a game that means something in Week 17.
Yeah, I know. A lot of questions about culture change and what he's done this season.
You know, I think
the season's not over, I guess, is my point.
Yeah, people are in full-blown advance mode, advanced story mode. Get the stuff you need so you can write the stuff so you don't have to work on New Year's Day in the event that the Bills don't make the playoffs and you got to do season wrap-up stuff. This is how media people
think.
That's
the way it works, yeah. You know, they've got a job to do, too.
Is it because, like,
their
and
schedule doesn't coincide with the Bills?
We're there. We're going to be in Miami. We're going to travel. We're going to cover the game, go about our routine. And some of them don't. Is that why that happens, do you think? Or, I don't know.
That's a good question, too.
I think they're just trying to advance and get the answers they need for storylines coming down the pike next week.
It's a big game.
It's a big game, yeah.
There's a couple of things, and, you know, we're going to get into the Twitter poll in a little while, but, you know, there's a couple of things that have to happen. But it is, if you want to, you know, this is not exactly the playoffs for the Bills, but it's a
–
you
got to win.
You got to win.
Yeah.
But the problem is you may win and still not get in.
Right.
That's the issue. We've been through this thing a long time, where you got years where the Bills control their own destiny coming down the stretch, but it's four games down the stretch and they got to win all four games to get in the playoffs. And it's just no fun to be in that situation. But I think this is a little different than in that there's a couple of things at play. One, the team exceeded expectations this year in their wins.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question that nobody thought they would win this many games. Now, some people probably said that and predicted it, but I think they particularly in the first week of the season when the trades started happening, when they started making the drastic personnel changes that coincided with the culture changes that you and I spoke about yesterday,
right,
Brownie. I think that's a lot of things in play here. And I think that it's interesting, I think, how the media has handled it. You talk about these end-of-the-year interviews. How are they going to quantify? I mean, how are the people in the fans? It'll be interesting to see what the fans think about this team when this is all said and done, in the playoffs, out of the playoffs, or what have you. I think that may have a big effect on how that plays out here at the end. But, you know, if they play well, win on Sunday, no matter what anybody else does, it'll be interesting to see what fans think.
It'll be a 9-win season.
I think fans will be fairly ready for, like we said yesterday, I'm kind of going to be bummed the season's over.
Me too. All right, Chris Brown is with us. Chris, a couple of issues to talk about, and we a lot of people have discovered this, and you'd mentioned it briefly yesterday. I took a deeper look at it overnight and this morning. The second half shutdown of the Buffalo offense is pretty amazing. What did I have? The last five games, they have no touchdown scored in the second half.
No offensive touchdowns.
They have one, the overtime touchdown against the Colts.
Right.
That's the only touchdown after halftime scored on offense in five games. That's a third of a season.
Yeah, and the biggest problem, and this has been from start to finish this season, is the third quarter. They have been grossly outscored in the third quarter. I think on the season it's 91-49.
They average, I think, 9 points per game in the third quarter.
Yeah, and the last seven games it has not been that. In
right.
the last seven games they've been outscored 75-12 in the third quarter. So it's actually gotten worse as the season has gone on. I don't know if it's lack of adjustments at halftime, not staying ahead of the curve in terms of what the opponent's coming out with defensively in terms of the adjustments they're making. I don't know if they're scripting plays for the second half in the halftime locker room, much like they do at the beginning of the game, and they stick to that. I mean, Coach Dennison has said time and again that very quickly he's gone. He scripts the first 15 plays of a game, and
right.
those in large part have worked relatively well, but he will go off script if something happens or, you know, you're behind the sticks or whatever, or there's an injury. He's not shy about going off script and calling something else. He's not married to it by any sense, but something's happening in the third quarter there where there it's just not getting done. And a lot of and the Bills have won a lot of the coin tosses this season where they've deferred,
yeah.
and so they've had the first possession in the
yeah.
second half, I want to say 10 or 11 times out of their first 15 games so far. So it's not like they're not getting that extra possession. They get one at the end of the half and one at the start, kind of like what happened in New England here. Tie the game, get a field goal, up three. So they've put themselves in position to get the edge coming out of the locker room at halftime with the first, you know, with the ball in their hands to start. But for whatever reason, they are just getting blown off the scoreboard in the third quarter, particularly in yeah. these last seven games.
And I'll tell you that's something about that to me falls on the coaching staff. I mean, that's because yeah. in halftime, there's some when I do games, one of the crucial things we look at is the success coming out of halftime. Coaching staff should have a handle on what the other team's game plan is and what their problems have been because of it, and seeing, trying to get a handle and an idea of what the, ahead of what they, I mean, if the other team's
yeah.
going to adjust to your game plan, you've got to adjust to their adjustment kind of thing. The Bills have not done a good job of that. And I think that's one of the things when they sit down as a staff after this season, they're going to take a long, hard look at it because certainly they should know the reasons for it or come up with a philosophy of, and try and fix it because you can't, I mean, the second half is more crucial than the first.
What goes on in there in the locker room at halftime? 12
well,
minutes.
There's
total.
No rah-rah
no.
stuff. There's no, hey, we
there's
can
not
do
enough
this.
Time.
Yeah, there's no
time to do anything.
Yeah, you go to the bathroom, you sit down, say, this is what they're doing, this is what we're going to do. And this is what we're going to do. And quickly, if you can, get them a why. You know, they're doing this, the A, B, and C, so we're going to do anti-A, anti-B, and anti-C.
Whiteboard work?
Yeah, absolutely. Work? A lot of chalkboard stuff. And then as a group. And then, of course, the coordinator and the quarterbacks are over there talking. And then the position coaches will come in and talk to the wide receivers, offensive line. They'll all have some things. Even the offensive line guys say, hey, listen, if we call 56 slant this way, we're not going to block it like this against this front. We're going to block it like this. You know, mm-hmm. we're going to change up some blocking schemes if you can. A lot of wrinkles are thrown in. And they'll say, hey, listen, we're also got a play we're going to throw in the second half. We didn't practice all week, but we've got, you know, it's on our offense. We've run it before. Remember this one? Da, 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 and they're going to do this, and this is what we're looking for, that kind of thing.
Is there dialogue, feedback? Do they say to Eric Wood or Richie what's working, what's not? Kyle, what do you
yeah, think? Yeah, they might say, listen, if when the guy's in the when the guy's in the gap, I can't reach him. You know, we're going to have to do something different. We're going to have to double him or change the blocking scheme up, which kind of coincides with what I was talking about, play selection and
yeah.
changing the blocking scheme. So they might say, listen, we can't handle like we can't handle Ndamukong Suh on the counter tray. You know, we got to do something different. And so, all that stuff goes on. It's very technical. It's very businesslike.
Very fast.
Very fast.
Because you're only talking about 8 or 9 minutes by the time you get everybody
yeah.
in there. The
yeah.
coaches from the booth get down there.
Right.
I mean,
the
you got 8 or 9 minutes,
yeah.
and then they got to. I mean, the coaches in the booth, they got to leave with like 4 minutes before halftime's over to get back up and in their seats before your team's got the ball again.
Yeah. Chris Brown in studio with us. One of the questions I have about this game, both Chris and Steve, that I'd like to engage you guys on, trying to figure out the Dolphins, who were eliminated last week in an ugly incident with Adam Gase and Jarvis Landry last week in game. Disappointing year for them. They went from 10 wins to, what are they, 6 wins now out of the playoffs. What do we expect to see from them? Are they, you know, we had that kind of chippy game 2 weeks ago here when there were plays after the whistle and some questionable hits. Are they going to lay down? Are they going to?
I think they're in mail-in mode. Yeah,
you do.
I
hate to rely on that.
I don't want
to
rely on it either. But I they're going to just every sense that I'm getting from them is
never take that for granted. I mean, here's what happened. They won't mail it in until they're down double digits in the second half.
Okay. Well, hopefully we get there.
I think if you what you want to hope for is a similar. What you want to hope for is a similar first half to the one you had against them in the first game. 3 straight, you know, touchdown drives, 3 for 3 in the red zone. You're up 21-6 at half. I think if you're there, then it's full mail it in mode. Run for the bus. Season's over.
That
anyway.
May be. And if that happens, you can bet LeSean McCoy or a Cadet or somebody is going to be getting 25 carries in the second half. Because knowing Sean McDermott and this coaching staff and the quarterback and the conservative nature and let our defense win it for us, Tyrod won't throw it in the second half if that's the case.
And another question about how this game might progress along. If it's working for the Bills and they have a lead, maybe a comfortable lead, at what point does everybody's attention on the field, on the bench, start turning towards the other NFL scores of consequence?
First time it comes up on the scoreboard.
Have you been in that position?
Yeah, first time it comes up on the scoreboard. You're looking. You're finding. You get out there on the. I'm on special team, so I've got plenty
of
time. I'm on the bench. No, really, seriously, you go out there and you're looking around. You're thinking, okay, where do they put it? Because every stadium is different. Yeah. Where do they have the updates? You find it and think, okay, that's where I'm looking when I want to find out.
Yeah.
And you find out where it is, and you kind of.
Because they'll all tell you they won't.
Absolutely.
It's human nature. It's curiosity,
it's
man.
It's human nature. Because, listen, if Baltimore is trailing 17-0 midway through the second, you're on the sideline. Your guys are – you're telling your boys that. You're going, come on. Hey, guys, come on.
It's right there for you.
Let's go.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a huge boost. And that's the way it is. That's human nature. And that's – you can't – hey, they're grown men. You can't treat them like it's – Christmas morning or anything.
Let's take a call or two while Chris Brown is with us. Chris, along with Steve Tasker in studio. John and Tonawanda on the line. John, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. How you doing today? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, Steve, I just want to kind of echo just what you guys were talking about yesterday. I honestly think eventually you are going to be a Hall of Famer. It seems to me that these days – they're putting a little bit more emphasis than years past on special teams, and I think you're going to be recognized for those efforts. So I hope you get in. The other question I have, or I do have a question on this playoff scenario. I'm trying to wrap my head around this. Right now, currently, Baltimore is 5, Tennessee 6, you got Chargers 7, Buffalo 8. But all the media outlets have, if Baltimore loses – somehow it seems like they have Buffalo leapfrogging, and, you know, Buffalo wins, of course. They have leapfrogging, you know, Baltimore to get to that fifth spot. I'm just trying to wrap my head. How did we leapfrog L.A., and, you know, them being a seed ahead of us now, or, you know, being seventh and we're in eighth? I know we have the better conference record, but they have the head-to-head.
Well, that's it. The first tiebreaker is overall record, and – and that then it goes down to, then it goes overall record, head to head, conference record. And the problem is, John, that when you have two or three teams tied, the head to head goes out the window, and it goes conference record, and then
common opponents.
And that's why the Chargers get eliminated.
That's why the Chargers lose out to that to everybody, because they stunk in the first part of the year, and all their games really mattered in those tiebreakers.
Yeah, the best they can do is 6-6 with a win. And the Bills, the worst they can do with a win is 7-5. So in a three-way tiebreaker, you know, which is why the Bills need Tennessee and the Chargers to lose.
John, it has to do with the caller. It has to do with how many teams are tied at that 9-7 spot. Baltimore would be 9-7. Buffalo would be 9-7. Tennessee and L.A. could all be 9-7. If all of those things happen, Buffalo will lose out the tiebreaker to Tennessee and to the Chargers, I think.
That's right. Baltimore, if everybody wins, Baltimore is in. Because Baltimore is the win and in scenario.
Right. That's right.
Team. They can lose and still get in also. And I don't want to get into all the convoluted different ways it can happen. But there are ways. There are about three scenarios where the Bills could get the fifth seed, not just the sixth seed. A whole host of things has to happen for that. But the fifth seed still is in play for the Bills.
We do know this. If the Bills get in, they're either going to be looking at Kansas City or Jacksonville, right?
First round, on the road.
On the road. Any one of those matchups appeal to you more than the other? What do you guys think? They've beaten Kansas City once. Jacksonville is a great defense.
Kansas City only worries me because they're more battle-tested in the postseason than Jacksonville. Jacksonville hasn't been to the postseason in 10 years either. So as I look at it, I say, give me the other team that's just as new to the playoffs as I am. Mm-hmm. And
I would say give me the other team. I'd say give us Jacksonville because our quarterback's better than theirs.
Better than Bortles?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm not a Bortles guy.
Yep, I'm not either.
You'd find a lot of
now their defense is for real. Their defense is for real, but the Bills' offense, I think, would be a tough matchup for their defense because our quarterback can get out. He can make deep throws. We got weapons on the outside, and we can run it. And that, I think, when you do need to throw it, you can still run it with Tyrod. That gives defenses big problems, particularly a defense that can't really ring up – doesn't have an offense that can ring up a lot of points. I mean, I think give me Jacksonville, even though they've got the better record than Kansas City. Kansas City's they're a fast football team.
Athletic. Yeah.
They're fast and athletic offensively, and they can bust out. Plus, that's a tough – I'd rather play in Jacksonville than Kansas City.
Absolutely. And it's not perfect, but it looks like it's back on track for Kansas City here after that long stretch of games, five straight losses where, you know, the wheels looked like they fell off. It looks like Andy Reid's got that group back humming along right now. And, you know, Alex Smith, you know, people – I know he's got his share of critics, but he's been to the playoffs before. He knows what it's about. Give me the other team that's just as new to the playoffs as the Bills are going to be get there.
Alex Smith knows how to play football in the playoffs, and Blake Bortles has never done that.
You don't think there'll be tarping off seats at Arrowhead Stadium for a playoff game?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, that's a much more difficult place.
It's a difficult,
play.
More difficult venue
weather,
too. Yeah,
right. and the venue, the crowd.
Yeah. Hey, Chris Brown, before we let you go, I want to get you involved in our Twitter poll and get your thoughts on this. And of course, folks at home, willing to do if you're willing to join us, we'd love to have you. With the Bills win, we know that's got to happen first. What's the most likely scenario for the Bills to clinch a playoff berth? Is it the Ravens losing at home to Cincinnati, or is it the Chargers and the Titans losing their games? The Chargers at home to Oakland, the Titans at home to Jacksonville. What do you think, Chris? What's the most likely scenario with the Buffalo win to clinch a playoff berth?
I do think it's Baltimore. I know they're playing better of late, but in my mind, they're facing probably the best defense. Well, Jacksonville's a good defense that Titans have to face. I think relying on one game is certainly easier than relying on the outcome of two games.
I think it's about as likely in both scenarios. I mean, I can see both those scenarios happening very easily, either Chargers and Titans losing. And certainly in Cincinnati, the one thing I'm thinking about in Baltimore with Cincinnati coming in is Marvin Lewis's purportedly his last game as head coach.
Right.
He means a lot to the guys in that locker room. He brought Adam Jones, Vontaze Burfict. There's a lot of guys in that locker room who owe a great deal to Marvin Lewis, and I don't think that's going to get lost on that locker room. I think I have high hopes for the Bengals to go in and play extremely well against Baltimore.
All right, Chris Brown, we thank you for joining us today. We'll talk to you again as the week moves along. Chris Brown, Bills Insider at BuffaloBills.com, joining us to kind of break down the practice today and where the Bills are at on this practice. As this practice week begins, they're getting set to play the Miami Dolphins on Sunday. Steve is here for the rest of the afternoon. We got a lot more coming up, including some comments from head coach Sean McDermott. We will totally immerse ourselves in that Twitter question and which way you'd like to see that go moving forward. And a lot more to come with Thurman Thomas scheduled to join us, and we'll hear from Tyrod Taylor and LeSean McCoy after practice. In the meantime, time to announce the winner of the Buffalo Bills Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week for the week against the New England Patriots. Blue Rock Energy, the official electricity supplier of the Buffalo Bills. The votes are in, and this week's winning player is safety Jordan Poyer, the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. Jordan Poyer got the majority of the votes this week in balloting by Bills fans. Make sure you know you can vote after every Bills game. Go to BlueRockEnergy.com or Blue Rock Energy's Facebook page to learn more. Jordan Poyer, the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. Steve and I back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. Happy holidays, everybody. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in for Donald Jones today. You're back tomorrow, right? You're going to be back with us tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm here.
Thank you for doing this.
Today and tomorrow.
That's a good way for you to spend your holiday, I think.
Yeah, it's the highlight of my week.
You it like is. Hanging I'm around the Bills,
I do,
though, right?
I do. You're comfortable I love, here? I like coming in and working with you. It's fun.
You like having
We've been
steak.
Friends for a long time. You know?
You and I. We have?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
We've been friends for... It's got to be going on 30 years.
When did you start at Channel 7? I started there in 89.
87
so you had me there by a year.
Yeah, but we were friends before that because you were at BEN and all that stuff.
That's right.
Yeah.
And speaking of Channel 7, we both worked there, and I have to mention that the guy who was Mr. Channel 7 for a long time, Irv Weinstein, passed away yesterday after a long battle with ALS. I sent a letter to him about 14, 15 months ago, kind of explaining to him what he meant to me. He meant a lot to me and my wife and our careers, to be honest with you. He was a remarkable figure, one of the wittiest people I've ever met. And my wife and I were talking a lot, and you were around that newsroom a little bit. There was a certain character to that newsroom that all came from Irv. It was profane. It was loud. It was frequently abusive back and forth, all in kind of fun, but all designed to get the good product on the air. And as much as you've been around broadcasting almost as long as I have, a lot of egos in broadcasting. Yeah. Irv had a sizable ego, but when I think about it, his ego was all caught up in – let's put on the best show we can. It wasn't about it's about me. He wanted the sports guy sitting next to him to be good. He wanted the weather guy to be good. He wanted the reporters. He wanted my wife, the consumer reporter. He wanted us all to shine, and that was what his ego was all tied up in. And that's a pretty good trait to have, I think. He definitely was a giant in
you
this
don't,
industry.
Yeah, you don't last as long as he did, you know, with Rick Azar and Tom Joles. Those guys don't last unless they're really good. They were committed to being really good.
Yeah.
And it's no question it's the – the passing of an icon here in Buffalo, certainly a fixture for everybody. And they were that was the number one station for decades because of largely because of Irv and his newscast and their credibility.
And I send my condolences along to his wife, Elaine, to his daughter, Beth, whom I have met. He had a daughter, Rachel, I believe, who I don't think I ever met. I met his son, Mark, a couple of times, a really cool family. And Irv he's already missed it now, especially for those of us who knew him. So that aside, we move on with football, the Buffalo Bills and the Miami Dolphins coming up. But before we move ahead, Steve, there's an incident. You know, we talked about it yesterday when you were here, the Kelvin Benjamin play.
Yeah.
The touchdown that was not. I talked to a couple of friends of mine around the league over the last 24 hours who still can't believe that touchdown did not count. Yeah. Everybody's got feelings about it. This came out last night, Showtime inside the NFL last night, where they have a microphone picking up natural sound on the sidelines, and they were right there when the call was made, and they got the Bills' reaction to the call, video and audio, the field judge, Mark Hittner, on the sidelines. And we're going to play a clip from you. It's Tyrod Taylor talking to the field judge, Mark Hittner, about the how could that not be a touchdown. And then it's Sean McDermott asking essentially the same question. And you're going to be really interested to hear what one of the officials, field judge Mark Hittner, had to say about it. This was seconds after the Kelvin Benjamin touchdown was scored. And it went on to when the touchdown was overruled. Just listen to this for a second, and let's see what you think.
Makes the snap, fires to the end zone, looking for Benjamin. He makes the catch, is he in? No signal yet. Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo! Looking at a replay now. Toe drag, I believe, on his left foot. I believe the touchdown will stand.
What are you looking at?
What'd you think?
I can't.
It's close, though. I know it's close.
It's damn close. One, that's a hell of a throw.
Two.
That's a hell of a throw and a catch, I thought.
The ruling on the field has been changed. Oh. It is an incomplete pass.
Incomplete.
How is that incomplete?
I don't know.
Sean McDermott, how is that incomplete? And the field judge, Mark Hittner, says, I don't know. I mean, this is the point I made yesterday, Steve. I don't want to rehash it. As disappointed as folks in Buffalo are, as disappointed as the Bills were in the call and the players, and they are the aggrieved parties, I also believe the officiating crew on the field the other day, including Zimmer. I think it's Steve Zimmer, the guy who actually made the call, who's right there seeing the play. And you can hear it in Mark Hittner's voice. I don't know how they overturned that. Those those officials are aggrieved, too. They were hurt by that. That's their call. They're professionals. They made the call. He was certainly got it right. He probably did get it right. And certainly there's not enough evidence to overturn it in New York, but they found enough evidence to do it. I think the officials were hurt by this, and the league in general is hurt by that kind of indecision and that kind of call.
Yeah, we can go on and on about it.
I know. I'm sorry.
I agree. Should have been a catch, should have been a touchdown. Don't know if it would have made the difference in the game. And I heard on one of the other sports shows, Jeff Saturday, the longtime great Colts center, was kind of chastising everybody for stop complaining about it because it was because the Patriots lengthened it out and won by more than a couple of scores, and that play didn't have anything to do with it. So stop complaining about it. My point is, hey, you got guys out there making seven digits, making plays like that. You've got a league that's worth about – that generates probably $10 billion of income a year. Get it right. I don't care if it's first down. I don't care if it's the first quarter or the fourth quarter, because if you're not going to do that, why is it that only the only officials' calls that count are the ones that are going to make a difference at the end of the game?
Right.
That's ridiculous. Get these calls right. That's why we're in this situation in the first place. How many hundreds back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, how many hundreds of plays should have been overturned, were gotten wrong, that would have made a big difference, that meant something to a lot of people? That's why we started replay in the first place. If you're going to use it right. Get somebody in there who knows how they're doing it. Don't overthink it. Just get it right. And, you know, we won't have – it's going to be tough, no questions, because as soon as you start replay, you're going down a slippery slope. But if you're going to do replay, do it right.
Do it right. Or not at all.
Get it right.
I'd be okay with.
And if you can't get it right, say, hey, we can't overturn it. That to me was, now you're back. Now we're not back in the 1970s. Even now you're missing it. With instant replay, you're missing it.
Yep, you know? I hear you. Well, it was just I thought it very enlightening to hear the field judge, part of the officiating crew, Mark Hittner, said, asked by Sean McDermott, why was that overturned? And the tone of his voice, I don't know.
Well, they can't.
I know, but they're aggrieved, too. They're trying to get it right, and they're being overruled.
And they're not even looking at it, you know.
Right.
He doesn't know, because he didn't get a look at the end.
Well, they're watching on the scoreboard, you know.
Are they? Did they show it in the scoreboard?
They were over and over. Yeah. Anyway, we'll try to move beyond that. Our Twitter poll today, with the Bills' victory, if they beat the Dolphins Sunday, what's the most likely scenario, the next thing that has to happen for them to win? We're asking you to be a prognosticator here. On Twitter, 72% of you say Ravens lose, most likely scenario to knock down the playoff spot for the Bills. 28% of you say both the Chargers and Titans losing. That's, I think, I agree with that. I mean, one team lose or two teams lose. So the odds would tell you one team would be better and more likely to happen. But give us your thoughts on that. 803-0550, toll free 1-888-550-2550. Call here from Chuck and Clarence. Go ahead, Chuck. You're on the air with us.
Yeah, hi, guys. Hi. First off, Murph, I saw you sitting at the desk there with Irv Weinstein on his last broadcast.
Yeah.
Congratulations on that. That was.
Yeah. Thanks. That was my job, by the way. Is you coming to work today? Yes, I am. But no, thank you. It was an honor to be there as well. You know, it was crazy.
I bet it was. I just wondered if we're in the fourth quarter or deep into the game and we're down a couple of scores, do we make a quarterback change? Do we really throw everything at it? What do you guys think?
I think you got to do everything you can. If that's what it means, that'd be fine. You got to pull out all the stops. Onside kick, surprise onside kick to start the second half, flea flicker passes, triple reverse passes. This is a must win, an absolute must win. So I'm with you. If something happens where – and I wouldn't be adverse to putting in a pod of plays. I mean, you got to take a lot of time to do this. But at this point of the season, I mean, I don't know how many reps Tyrod Taylor needs in the regular offense, but you got a package of plays with Joe Webb. You got a package of plays with Nathan Peterman. You got a package of plays with – everybody in there, you know, it's all hands on deck. So I'm with you. You pull out all the stops to win this game. You put in special plays. You put in desperation plays. And you make sure everything is up and running for this game because you have got to get it in the win column at all costs.
Yeah. They're not going to, you know, Sean McDermott.
And it's the last game of the season,
right,
too. I mean, you have plenty of time to heal up in February.
Yeah. Sean McDermott will tell you he's going to do whatever it takes to win the game. And if he thinks a quarterback change would help him win the game, you better be sure he's going to do it. I have no doubt about that. There's no hurt feelings. There's no long-range considerations. It's all about this game, which, by the way, makes it a fantastic game for me to call, for people to go to, yeah. I think. You know, it's a playoff game for Buffalo.
They have to win. It's what this franchise has been waiting on for a lot of years. Now, this isn't officially the playoffs, but it's certainly nice to be in this spot. Absolutely. Rather than where they have been in years past.
Bill calling from Buffalo. Go ahead, Bill. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing today, guys?
Good. Thank you.
Good.
Just giving you a call. Want to talk about wondering why when somebody's going to step up and start saying, you know, the common man out there, everybody out there, your average fan, they all think that football's fixed at this point. New England gets call after call, controversial. When was the last game that New England was in that was a close game that wasn't decided by a controversial call? I mean, people aren't stupid. You media people need to start stepping up and saying football's fixed. It's like the WWF now.
No, it's not fixed.
It's not fixed.
Replay is broken, but football's not fixed.
It is broken in a number of ways, but it's not predetermined, that's for sure. And I get what you mean. And, yeah, I've got buddies who tell me that all the time, particularly when something like this happens. But you're telling me that Jesse James a couple of weeks ago didn't know the catch rule, and the catch rule is what it is. And
it's a bad rule.
It's a bad rule, but they called it the right way, and the players got to know. There's also reasons for that. Like I've heard that the New England Patriots, a guy will get benched if he extends the ball to the pylon. A Patriot player going in for a touchdown is not allowed to extend the ball to the pylon, specifically because of what happened to Derek Carr going into the end zone against Broncos lost their last chance to win the game or tie the game. He extended the ball, went through the end zone, touchback. You get benched in New England for doing that. So they do things differently. They reap the benefits of doing things differently. Once in a while, in a great while, it comes back to bite them. But there is no way you'll ever convince me the National Football League is predetermined as to who's going to win, who's going to lose. There's no way.
It's not. Referee this week, by the way, is Jeff Triplett with his crew. Steve Freeman on the crew, the former Bills safety. He is the back judge. Do you ever have any encounters with Steve Freeman?
Yeah.
He played here. He's a good guy.
We're teammates.
Oh, yeah, for a couple years.
We were teammates for 1 year, and he's a great guy, player. And
now he's a great official.
Played 10 or 11 years here, then went and finished up his career 1 year in Minnesota,
yep.
And he's been an official for a long time now. Now his son is also an official, and Steve's been doing games, and he's done games here in Buffalo a number of times.
Yeah, he's got the assignment along with Jeff Triplett, the referee. Steve and I back with more in a moment. Steve Tasker's here in studio with us, co-hosting in lieu of Donald Jones. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
John Murphy with Steve Tasker filling in for Donald Jones. We're here live at One Bills Drive. Happy holidays, everybody. The Bills wrapping up practice as we speak. We're going to hear a little bit from Tyrod Taylor and LeSean McCoy at the podium as the afternoon goes along. Maybe get a player in here to discuss with us. And Thurman Thomas joins us about the 2 o'clock hour here as well. Talking about the Bills, what needs to happen. You know the scenario now for the playoffs and just about where they're at going into the regular season finale. Tom on the line from West Seneca. Hi, Tom. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, John. Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
It's just great to be this excited at this phase of the season, December 31st. And I'm one of those diehard fans. I keep the faith all the time. And secondly, Steve, thank you so much for being a great Buffalo Bill on the field and off the field. You are a true role model for kids. And about the Jesse James catch, the way I saw that there was, I thought he had control, and his knee, they should have spotted the ball on the 1 yard line, in my opinion.
Mm.
And it's not good to dwell on the past, but we did get chipped on that call, to say the very least, on Sunday. And also a question for you guys. Does Tyrod Taylor have the option or permission, per se, to audibilize? And that's pretty much it. And Happy New Year, guys.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, I believe does have the option on a limited basis maybe to audible.
Yeah, and in fact, he does have the option. In fact, the obligation to get out of certain plays versus certain fronts and change the play on certain situations. Absolutely no question. Most quarterbacks do. Even young rookie quarterbacks have to have the ability to get out of a bad play versus a bad front because they anticipate times when they're going to be snapped off defended before the ball's even snapped. They know they're in a bad play. So every team gives their quarterback a chance to change that play. Now, there's a short menu of plays they want to go to because what happens is when the quarterback gets to the line and sees a look that negates the play that they're in, there's also a play that will work perfectly against that front, and that's what they switch to. So they don't just pick a play out of the air. They have a play specifically designed for that instance. So, yeah, he does have the ability to do that and does so regularly. So there you have it.
Steve, late games in Miami, late season games. You've played them before. I was just looking at the forecast. Supposed to be partly cloudy skies on Sunday afternoon, high of 77. I mean, that's almost 70 degrees warmer in Miami Sunday than it is here today. What has been your experience playing down there?
Bro, you know what it's like.
It's hot. Listen, it'll be muggy.
Listen, nah, don't even kid. Listen, you get out, like the guys they're practicing inside today. We didn't have that luxury when I was here because, before pre-1995, the field house wasn't here. So we were practicing in the stadium, rain or shine, cold or right. Hot, whatever. And let's face it, we're all living here, and we you get out of work no matter what you do. Forget about even if you're not a Buffalo Bill, but if you're a Buffalo Bill, you come in the morning, it's dark, you're bundled up, you come in, you put your stuff on, you work all day, you go out and it's cold every time you stick your head out the door. Even right. If you practice outside and you come out, you go back home and you're freezing cold at night, it's dark, you go in, so you're bundled up everywhere you go outside. You wait for the car to warm up. You live in it. Right, we all live in this big winter refrigerator up here.
Yes.
So picture this: you're in great shape. You're going down for a game that's really fun to play. You love playing football and great. You've been bundled up all week, and you get down and you step off the plane in Miami and walk down those steps.
Yeah, you can always smell the ocean.
You feel like a dry sponge. Dipped in warm water. I mean, you just soak it in. I mean, it feels so good. Plus, you get to the stadium the next day, and you're going out on the field with game pants and a T-shirt on. You almost feel like you're playing nude. It feels so good to play. And people used to say, wow, how can you get down in the heat of Miami late in the season? You guys been – listen, you can look forward to play really well down there because it feels so good just to go down there, put your uniform on normally without having two layers underneath the uniform and long sleeves and all this stuff and the concern and the extra socks and all. Just go down, put your stuff on and go out and play. It is a great feeling.
Not a problem at all?
It is a great feeling, man. Well, I used to just love it, man. It's so good, man. Step off that plane and just breathe it in. And it just carries right through the game.
I like that. I like to hear
that. It really
feels
good.
Okay. We're going to break. We're going to come back. You're going to hear some players in the next hour as they get done off the practice field today. And we'll hear more from you about the Bills, their playoff chances, and looking ahead to this game against Miami. So come on back. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. Update from One Bills Drive, where the Buffalo Bills have just wrapped up their indoor practice at the AdPro Sports Training Center. Calvin Benjamin, no practice today with his knee. Kyle Williams got the day off as he nurses a groin injury. Cornerback Sharice Wright, still in concussion protocol, did not practice. Offensive lineman Ryan Groy, off of practice today with an illness. Limited work today for cornerback E.J. Gaines, who missed last week with his knee. Limited work today for Charles Clay, who's had a knee injury. The Bills getting set to travel south to Miami to play the Dolphins in a game they must win in order to keep their playoff hopes alive. Yesterday, the Bills made some roster moves. They activated added three players to the active roster from the practice squad, including wide receiver Malachi Dupree, running back Marcus Murphy, and defensive tackle Ricky Hatley. They are all on the 53-man roster now. The Bills put running back Travaris Cadet on injured reserve and wide receiver Andre Holmes. Holmes missed last week with a neck injury. Cadet fractured his ankle in Sunday's game against the Patriots. The Bills also released defensive tackle DeAndre Coleman to make room for those three who are added to the roster. Bills Dolphins, 4:25 p.m. on Sunday. You can catch the game right here on our flagship radio station in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550. Ravens coach John Harbaugh not pleased with the league's decision to move kickoff for his pivotal game against Cincinnati to 4:25. He's worried it will affect the size of the crowd at M&T Bank Stadium on New Year's Eve and thinks it might be a disadvantage for the Ravens. Jacksonville Jaguars coach Doug Marrone, his team locked into the number three seed in the AFC going into this Sunday's game against Tennessee. He says he has no plan to sit players in the season finale. Marrone's quote, make no mistake about it, we're going to play to win. We're going to do everything possible to win the game, period. A different approach from the Rams, who have clinched. Several key Rams starters may sit for Sunday's regular season finale against the San Francisco 49ers. Buffalo Sabres back in action after the holiday break. The Sabres play tonight against the Islanders in Brooklyn, a stretch of six straight games away from home. The World Juniors resume today at KeyBank Center. Switzerland plays Belarus at 3 p.m. and then at 7 o'clock tonight, Slovakia plays Canada. That's the update from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy joined by Steve Tasker in studio with us, special guest co-host with Donald Jones off this week. Are you interested at all in the World Juniors this week?
I was just talking to Andrew Peters outside.
Yeah, yep.
And you know, I was having this conversation with my sons. You know, we have tickets to the Sabres, and
right.
And what exactly the age for? I didn't even know what the age range was. It's 17 to 20 year olds. I thought it was 18 and under guys, but it's 17 to 20. Some of these guys have obviously some NHL experience. If you guys listen to the Instigators, everybody knows this. I missed that part, but. Yeah, I'm kind of interested. I'm gone this weekend though for the outdoor game in the stadium. I'm not going to be in town.
An NFL game, right?
Yeah, I'm going to be in Indianapolis. So, I like hockey. That's it's with all love and respect to the NFL, hockey's much more fun live sport than football is. It's going all the time. I don't know how great it is to see it from, you know, the low down seats in New Era Field, but. It's fun, man. Yeah. It's a great atmosphere.
The outdoor game is Friday, just a couple of days away now. The rink is set. Those of you watching the simulcast on MSG get a look right now at what it looks like, the rink down there in the middle of the football
field. It's a great
field.
Advertisement for the city, too. Yeah. I mean, I love how Buffalo pops out. And that one they had with Pittsburgh and the Sabres
10 years ago
was – it's just phenomenal atmosphere. It's so fun.
Should be fun this Friday.
It's one of the only – maybe one of the few things with all – you know, respect to Andrew Peters and the guys on the Instigators. It's one of the things the NHL got right, one of 100 things. And I love the outdoor game. I like the Winter Classic.
Yeah.
Love it. I'm glad the Sabres are in it again.
Yep. At City Field on, what's that? Well, it's New Year's Day, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the Rangers.
Our Twitter poll today, I want to get you engaged in this. You know the scenario, right? The Bills have to win to stay alive for a playoff spot. They either have to get the Ravens to lose at home to Cincinnati or get the Chargers and the Titans to lose their home games. What's the most likely scenario for a playoff berth? That's our Twitter poll. Right now, a large majority, 72%, say most likely it'll be the Ravens losing after the Bills win. 28% say the Chargers and Titans losing. If you have thoughts on this or anything else along these lines, the Bills, the playoff chances, what else has to go on, give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Take a call here from David in Lackawanna. Hello, David. Go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hi, John.
Hi, David.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Dave.
I just want to say that I've been a Buffalo Bill fan for 52 years. And the quarterback, Tyrod Taylor, is the quarterback for us to win to get into the playoffs. I don't know why these armchair quarterbacks always want to make a quarterback change. And the guy is, I mean, he protects the ball better than any quarterback in the league. They just have to let him play and stop criticizing his play and just let him loose. The guy is phenomenal. He can go, if he go anywhere else, Buffalo will regret it.
All right, David, he may go somewhere else after the season. We'll see. But There's no, just so you're clear, so we're all clear, there's no internal discussion here about who gives them the best chance to win this week anyway. I mean, it's Tyrod.
Yeah, he may be responding to one of the earlier callers who said if it's a do or die and they feel like they may make a quarterback change to get a spark in the offense late in the game to do something. And, we, you know, he said, hey, it's all no holds barred. But, yeah, this is certainly Tyrod's team, no question about it. And until that changes and it, they may draft a guy in the offseason, I don't know. But Tyrod, in fact, I'll tell you, Tyrod, and you look at it, the way his contract has transpired over the last couple of years, Tyrod knows as well this is his spot. He reworked his contract twice over the last 2 years to make sure he was the guy here. He knows this is a great opportunity for him. He knows this is a team that he's going to be able to quarterback for as long as he can hold on to the job. And those opportunities are few and far between. Now, they're paying him well to do it, but they're paying him market rate. I mean, you're talking about a $15 million contract. That, and it's like, wow, it's an outrageous amount of money. And for you and me and the rest of us, it is. But for an NFL quarterback, particularly a guy who's starting every game for the team, it's not. It's a bargain, particularly if he plays well. And Tyrod is that guy. And as far as people criticizing, you're always going to have fans criticizing every quarterback, no matter who it is. Not in this building, inside the One Bills Drive, none of the coaches, none of the players are criticizing Tyrod Taylor. He's their guy. They like him. They like him. They're going to go with him, and they're ready to ride him all the way into the playoffs if they can. So the criticism that David was talking about, it's coming from outside the building, not inside. So that's really the only thing that matters.
It's noise.
Yeah, it's noise. Noise. It's noise. It's noise.
Choco on the line from New York City. Hello, Choco.
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Murphy?
Good,
and
Choco.
Also, thanks for taking my call.
No, it's Tasker.
That's all right. I've been called worse.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's all right. Go ahead.
Sorry, Tasker. I just wanted to pretty much just voice in my opinion on what's likely for the Bills to make the playoffs. So I'm looking at we have Tennessee losing, we have the Chargers losing, and I'm a little caught in between the Baltimore game. I think they might lose. And then the Bills will win. So my question, though, will be if everybody ends up losing.
Except for Buffalo or with Buffalo losing?
No, with Buffalo losing. It just stays the same, pretty much?
It stays as is, if pretty much, if everybody loses. If all of them lose, then Bills are out of it. Baltimore would probably still get in because L.A. and
– So you're saying if the Bills lose to Miami, if Jacksonville beats Tennessee, if the Bengals
beat
Baltimore and Oakland beats L.A. So in that case, the seeding goes New England 1, Pittsburgh 2, Jacksonville 3, Kansas City 4, and then it's Baltimore 5 and Tennessee 6. I have the magic chart right in front of me here.
Yep.
So it would be Baltimore and Tennessee 5 and 6.
It stays as is, yes. As it's projected now.
Yeah.
So,
thank you, guys.
You bet.
A happy new year.
Thanks, you too, Choco. Here's a call from Jack in Rochester. Hello, Jack. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I've got a comment about this trend to overturning some of the officials' calls on the field with the instant replay. One of the things that strikes me odd about that is, you know, the referees on the field, I mean, they got two eyes. They got binocular vision. They're seeing things in 3D. They see depth. Which is critical for knowing whether someone's foot is down or positioning of the players and such. When they do all these instant replays, the videos are just two-dimensional.
Yeah.
And no matter how much you want to slow it down or magnify it or do video tricks, you're still not taking in the amount of information a referee is going to see live on the field in certain situations.
Right.
And I think sometimes they kind of delude themselves with these slow motion and all this, that they're actually taking in more than the live referee does.
Well, Jack, one thing you have to remember, too, they got different cameras from different angles, so they can pick up the depth through different two-dimensional representations of a three-dimensional object. But and the same thing, and the contrast to that, Jack, is simply this. The official gets one chance to look at it, and it happens in a hundredth of a second, and it's easy to miss, and that's just the way it is. I mean, so you can – and I get what you're saying. There are some issues with replay, but – yeah, the fact that they have different camera angles and they can look at it over and over and they can extrapolate what they learn from one angle into another, a secondary angle, which is what they did in the Kelvin Benjamin thing to everyone's chagrin. And in this case, overturning a call that nobody thinks should have been overturned, they can still make a mistake with it, no question. But the fact that they can learn something from one angle and then turn the angle and learn something else gives them a better chance to get it accurate.
Jack, Jack, I don't just get what you say. I think I agree with what you say. I prefer to have a human element because the human element is not gone. Alberto Riveron of New York, a human, made the incredible decision to overturn what the humans on the field close to the action saw. The human element is not gone, and mistakes are still being made. And replay, I've said it a million times now, replay creates just as many problems as it settles. I'm ready to
Jack
throw
Murph,
it out.
Yeah, Jack, your caller in Rochester, Murph is on your side. He says do away with instant replay.
Throw
you
it out.
Can't do it now.
Why?
Because we're too far down that road.
What?
Too many good things have happened because of replay. You forget those because, oh, it seems simple when they get it right because they overturned this touchdown. It's like, well, yeah, that didn't count. And the problem is, and like I've said, told you, there's no way to write the rule so that when it happens on the field or in slow motion from two different angles replay, that you don't have a lot of instances that say, oh, that's not, you can't call that a catch. And it, when in live action, it looks like a catch and it sounds like a catch and it smells like a catch. It's still not a catch because of the way the rule is written. And when you break it down that way, you're always going to have instances where it's going to get overturned in a case where most people, particularly athletes, would say, you got to give that catch to the guy. You got to draw the line somewhere. And when you draw the line in a game like football, you're going to have 100 instances where the line gets blurred. And that's where replay comes in. It's you're going to find out what happened, and you're going to have to overturn or not overturn a call.
But it's overly complicated. It's too much, too many considerations that you have to sit through because the video's there. I'll live with the instant decision. I'll live with the wrong decision made on the field by humans. I'll live with that without this extra layer of rules. We've got rules and we've got standards now in the rule book, Steve, that nobody ever heard of before. Complete the process of the catch. Survive the ground. A football move, which has come and gone. You've got all these standards for catches in particular, which never existed before. When replay started, I remember the language specifically. When replay started, 18, 20 years ago? It was just going to be used for position and possession. Those two things. Where is the ball and who's got the ball? And they've gone totally berserk, adding new layers of interpretations and new permutations of what
the rules
are.
Well, here's the thing, too. If you didn't have the catch rule as it is today, it would be so easy to make a catch. Have two hands on it, 2 feet down, that's the catch. Anything else is a fumble.
Yes.
And then you'd have fumbles everywhere and all that. And I don't have a problem with that either. And it would make things much more simple. The guy has control of it at any point, as or after he has 2 feet on the ground, it should be a catch.
Yes.
Everything else should be a fumble. And
the ground
can't cause it.
Yeah, or incompletion.
That's right. So,
you know what? They'll make mistakes. I can live with those mistakes. You look at it, and I'm not saying you never have a replay, but you don't use replay to officiate. They'll make a mistake, and people will call up this show and others and complain, and they got that wrong. Yeah, they got it wrong.
And then you're going to lose.
But at least it's those guys that got it wrong.
You're going to lose a game where a guy gets
– no question. Gets,
here's the thing. He's going to have a hand on it or two fingers on it and one finger on it. They're going to call it control. He's going to fall to the ground in the end zone for the winning touchdown. The ball's going to skitter off into the wall, and it's going to be a touchdown. You lose the game, and then we're going to be right back to this square one. And that's the way it's going to be. That's just how the reality of that situation works when you start breaking stuff down with slow motion replay.
You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube.
You can't put it back in.
I say, let's put it in there. Let's open up the tube.
At least put the lid on the tube, right?
Yes, let's put it right back in there. Here's Cher from Buffalo. Go ahead, Cher. You're on the air.
Hey, Murph and Tasker, how are you guys?
Doing
great,
good.
Thank you.
All right, great. Murph, you know, I don't think they're feeling your pain as well as my pain about that Benjamin thing, so we got to keep talking about it.
Okay.
I just want to say one thing about that is, number one is, there's nothing there to overturn it, and that's the key. I mean, they were getting lost in several things.
Yeah.
The biggest thing to me, if that was a Patriot, I'm sorry, I'm bringing that up. That would have not been overturned. If he called, okay, no touchdown. Okay, now I'd understand. Okay, maybe, we got to keep it the way it is. You know, he didn't start with touchdown, but he started with touchdown. Now you have to come up with a really good argument as to why that is not a touchdown. And the argument, it's not right. Like you mentioned, I think a couple of times, some other person mentioned it, is they had to use two different frames, which means you got to calculate milliseconds. Was that there? And there's no way you could do that. So there's no evidence, and that's the biggest issue I have about that. I did want to talk about one other thing, but I want to hear your feedback about that. I don't want to take over your show here.
Okay.
Listen, they made a mistake. Mm-hmm. Former guys who did exactly the job that Alberto Riveron does in New York, both guys said he blew that call on instant replay.
My goodness.
And so – And that's not the first time that's ever happened. Well, perhaps it's the first time we've heard about on instant replay getting it wrong and overturning or not overturning. But it's not the first time where referees and the league acknowledge to the teams that they ruined the call. That happens on a weekly basis. Every team has plays that they call the league about, and they talk to Alberto Riveron and the rest of the officiating executives, and they go over every call, and they say, here's why we call it the way we did. This one we got right, that one we got wrong. This one, you may think we got it wrong, but we still think we got it right. It's all those discussions happen on a weekly basis in the NFL with every team. So don't think they don't know that they did that.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
See how they made that, how they make that mistake. Okay, sure, you make mistakes and we have to live with it. But you made that mistake right after the previous game with Jesse James. Issue. It should have been like, it should have been blown out of proportion with the simple thing of, you know, Trey White and Kronk. That was blown out of proportion. Like, oh, these guys are going to retaliate. And, you know, they blew that out of proportion and everyone was settled down, whatever. But this should have been really blown out. But anyway, I guess, okay, that's all I want to cry about that. I did want to bring up one QB thing if I have time.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so my thing I want to talk about is that my thing is I think we're in great hands, as we know and many can see, with McDermott. And I think one of the biggest things I like about him is that he was able to make that QB change in the middle of the year, even though many people didn't agree and maybe it wasn't the right move. But what I like about it is I think finally there's a coach that emphasizes the quarterback position like no other coach I've seen the Bills had. No other team would have put their job on the line. Maybe he's a first-year head coach, that's why. But I think it's great to see that he's willing to do whatever it takes to get this QB position right. Maybe five INTs and a half wasn't what I wasn't expecting. I still think Peterman is great because he doesn't care. He threw those five INTs. In the next two other games, he just started coming out firing again. He doesn't care. And that's what I like about that, and that's what I don't about Tyrod, and I don't think we're going anywhere with him. And I said this before, the two teams that I believe will is going to be Flacco's team and Phillip Rivers' team because they have great QBs. So that's
all right.
Okay, thanks, sure.
Yeah, that's and I agree with him. I like the direction the team has taken this year. I like the moves that they've made. I like the reasoning behind the moves that they made. You can argue all day long about the quality of players that were traded from this team and the quality of players that were brought in, the draft capital that was taken out and the draft capital that was brought in. The quarterback change, no question, it was an incredibly off the map move for what we have seen here in Buffalo in the past 17 or 18 years. We have not seen a move like that. And a lot of the national media crucified Sean McDermott for making that move. They came out of the woodwork wondering why they could do that to Tyrod Taylor. And quite honestly, it's easy to see when you look at what's happened to this team. There's been a handful of games, more than a handful of games, where Tyrod Taylor has not thrown for 100 yards. You can't win in the NFL throwing for less than 100 yards in a game. Maybe they did win a game like that or when he did that, but this is a league that's about throwing the football. And they are not proficient at that part of the game enough with this quarterback at this point. He knows that, and I've seen him throw – and we all seen him have great games too. We've seen him throw the football extremely well, and I like the guy. He's a quality guy. I'd love to have him on our team. But when you talk about throwing the football, it's something that this team has not done well enough to win consistently, and they may get in the playoffs despite it.
Despite of it. You know what's important to me about the switch to Peterman in the Chargers game – November 19th. That was big. It was major upheaval. As you pointed out, there was a lot of flack thrown Sean McDermott's way at that time, both before and after the five interception first half. You know what the takeaway for me is, though, that what happened after that? Bills won three of the next five games, including three of the next four. The team didn't implode. It didn't splinter. It didn't. People didn't choose sides. I like Tyrod. I like Nathan. They kind of came together and won three of the next five games. And I think that might be that when the story of the 2017 season is written, whether it's next Monday or a couple of weeks down the road, to me that will be the turning point. What happened after the Chargers game and after the Peterman decision?
You got to think of it a couple different ways. First of all, everybody said he's going to lose the locker room. The guys are going to hate him for making that move. Well, he didn't, because you know they might have seen the rationale behind
it.
Another thing is the kind of culture he has built within that organization sent a loud and clear message to everybody on the roster that, listen, if you're not doing what we want you to do, you're going to be benched. If it's not going well, I don't care who. And when you bench Tyrod Taylor, everybody else on the roster is sitting there going, I better do my thing, and I better do it really well, or I'm going to be sitting down. It was a message that was taken that way, because that's the kind of atmosphere that is in the locker room that they have traded for and traded away to get. And it seems to have paid huge dividends in a year where most of the experts thought the Bills would win six games or less.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a call before we take a break. David calling from Clarence with some thoughts on the Bills quarterback position. David, go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, guys.
Go ahead.
I'd like to touch in on a caller that said something about, he's been a Bills fan for 52 years. Well, I was too. I am too. I was part of. I used to live down in Texas for the Super Bowl run we had down there, and
yeah,
I know that Steve knows that when you lose four in a row, it hurts and it lasts a lifetime. So when I see what's going on with the season this year, I hear the comments about Tyrod Taylor and how long he's been our quarterback and what he's doing and the decision that was made, and I know you guys just talked about it. But how many of you guys are really going to say that he's going to take us to the promised land? How many of you guys can stand there and say that? And I'm going to just throw this out there and hang up. He's last in passing for all you Tyrod Taylor fans. And obviously, Tony Romo saw something when he called the game, because on individual passing routes, he made a point for the crowd to know that, hey, that's an open receiver in the NFL, and your man didn't get it to him. And
yeah, we most of it have been saying that for more than a year now. David, I don't know.
It's not
the Tyrod Taylor referendum show here. You know, we know who he is. I also believe he's the best quarterback for this Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no question that, you know, most fans here in Buffalo who watch this team watch it probably closer than Tony Romo does and could have told you the same things.
Right.
You know, I mean – And I like Tony, and I love listening to Tony do games, and I've been stoked to hear him in the booth. I love his perspective and his personality. But this is something that fans know. I mean, there are still major questions about Tyrod's ability long term. Sure. There's no question he does a lot of things, and a couple of things better than anybody else in the league. He's as good an athlete as there is at the position. He's got a strong arm. Strong character. He's a leader in the huddle, and he doesn't turn the football over. When you put all those things around him, or put those things into him and into the huddle of the Bills, and they're on the verge of making the playoffs. And that says a lot about what he has done, because when he got here, there was nobody else that was going to get him to the playoffs.
And I appreciate the call, David, but, you know, the show today is not – the Tyrod Taylor yes or no show, up or down, right? We've been through that. I'm sick of that topic. The offseason will be here. Now you're looking at me like I'm
crazy.
That's
true.
The offseason will be here sooner or later, and that topic will come up, no question. I just don't see how that's pertinent.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this, too. The sad part about it is if Nathan Peterman does anything except fall on his face against San Diego, he may well still be starting for the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just – you talk about a guy who, you know, the moment just got away from him and then steamrolled out of his control, and then getting a bad break coming in, getting a second chance when Tyrod was hurt, and getting 8 inches of snow on the field and then getting a concussion during the game. Now we know about Tyrod. We wish we knew about Nathan Peterman.
Sure.
And we don't know that now.
But job one right now is win the playoff game this Sunday, or win the game this Sunday, get into the playoffs.
Exactly.
Tyrod talked about that. We'll hear from him in just a couple of minutes as he spoke to the media. after practice today. We'll hear his comments post-practice coming up next. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Steve Tasker sitting in for Donald Jones today. You're welcome to join us. We're talking about a lot today. We're talking about quarterbacks, regrettably. No, I'm just kidding. We can always talk about anything you want.
Yeah, are we going to talk about what just happened in the break while we're out there?
Yeah, I got to find it, though. Where would I find that? But the report is that Pat Mahomes is going to get the start for the Kansas City Chiefs in their meeting.
Alex Smith has been benched. No, well, he hasn't been benched. He's getting a week off because it's a meaningless game. They're already locked into their spot in the playoffs in Kansas City. They can't move up or down. And for that reason, Andy Reid is going to get a look at Patrick Mahomes in a setting against the Denver Broncos. And it's all what makes a lot of sense, and all that, unless you're Alex Smith. And Alex Smith's got to be going, I've seen this movie before.
Here it is on ESPN. The Chiefs locked in at the fourth seed, going to start rookie Pat Mahomes against the Denver Broncos. Alex Smith, who started the team's first 15 games, will work with a scout team this week. Mahomes will get first-team reps in practice. This is an interesting note. I didn't realize this. If he did not start this game, Mahomes would have become the first quarterback drafted in the top 10 to not start a game during his rookie season since Jake Locker 6 years ago. Well, that's interesting. Not earth-shattering. But, no, it's not as interesting as I thought it would be. But Mahomes, that's interesting. And clearly he figures into their future, and they are desperate and clearly want to get a look at him. And why not start him in a meaningless game at the end of the year, right?
It's perfect. I mean, yeah, it's a great scenario because it gives your chance for your starting quarterback to take a week off, take a deep breath, get healthy, get feeling good. And you can also, in practice, you can start preparing Alex Smith for your playoff game.
Yeah.
You know, both film study wise, reps in practice at the other end of the field.
Yep.
There's a lot of things you can do getting ready for that. Although, you know, they probably don't know who it's going to be. You know, they don't know what their matchup's going to be at the number four spot. Or is it the number four? They're locked into the number four, right?
Yep.
So they're going to play on wild card weekend.
Oh, yeah.
So they're going to get one of, you know, two teams or three teams.
They're
so they can
Baltimore,
right,
Buffalo.
Baltimore, Buffalo, or Tennessee.
Right.
Maybe L.A. So it's great. I think the rest is really what the important thing is for Alex Smith. Although, like I said, you know, that's what happened to him in San Francisco. Week 8, he gets a concussion, never sees the field again, gets traded. They go to the Super Bowl and lose it. So
you know what? They cannot play the Chargers. The only teams they can play are Baltimore, Buffalo, or Tennessee, Kansas City.
There you go. So that's
because the Chargers cannot be anything but a six seed.
Right.
Okay.
So Mahomes is going to play.
Yeah. And, you know, I think obviously they've got the future to look at. And I think there's a lot of value. I think this is underrated. To get in a whole week's worth of reps for Pat Mahomes is probably going into Andy Reid's consideration. Like, it's one thing to say you're the starter, but to make Alex Smith the scout team quarterback and to let Pat Mahomes take the reps all week, I mean, they'll get feedback from that, too. Not just how Mahomes plays on Sunday against the Broncos, but how he prepared, how he handled the practice week. They'll get a lot of good feedback on him and what he's all about this week.
And I think also, I mean, it gives him a head start. I mean, that the interesting thing is, what does this do to the future of Alex Smith? What if Mahomes comes in and lights it up? Well, then what do you do?
I mean, they may have been ready to move on next year anyway, right? And this will add to their –
I don't know how you do that if you go deep in the playoffs and blow it up.
You think they'll go deep? I don't know.
Why? Hey.
we saw how they were in midseason. That was real. You know, the Bills beat them in that stretch.
But listen, they started out 6-0, and it looked – and I told you then when they were going 4-0, 5-0, 6-0 for those 3 weeks, I go, they can't keep this up for 16 weeks. And they didn't. But you know what? They got it back.
Yeah.
They started out so good early. Now they got it back a little bit. I mean, that's – you know, they're a handful, particularly this wild card weekend in their own place. You know, they're going to be – that's going to be a game that they've got to expect to win.
It's an interesting move. Intriguing. The Chiefs are going to start Pat Mahomes in the season finale this week against the Denver Broncos. We're all over the place here with phone calls. A lot of people want to talk about the Calvin Benjamin play and refereeing in general. Jeff in Buffalo on the line about that topic. Jeff, go ahead. You're with us on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, John and Steve.
Hi.
Hi. I'd like to talk about another crucial replay in the game that many people don't even talk about. The 4th-and-1. That we stopped them, and they reviewed it and gave them the first down.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, I know for a fact when you score a touchdown, you just got to break the plane. But other than that, for his fourth down, he reached out and then he brought the ball back. Now, you're down once your knee is down, that's when you spot the ball.
Right.
So I don't understand how they can review that, because the only thing he did was reached out like he was scoring a touchdown, which it was only a first down. Right. He reached out and pulled it back in.
Yeah, but Jeff, that's his progress.
Came up short.
Yeah, that's his progress though. And that's if he is still up and on his feet and reaches the ball back, you got to give him the forward progress of where the ball is, as particularly if he's going down as he's being tackled. And that's exactly what the situation was. And, you know, so, yeah, I get it. That's a tough one to swallow as well. But that one, I think, is okay, because if he's not down, you're going to give him every inch he's got coming to him as he extends the ball. And that's where the ball is. Now, he's still up off the ground when he reaches in. And that's and as he's getting tackled, you know, that's just like, you know, driving the guy back 5 yards off the line of scrimmage after he kind of gets up into the middle and giving it to him back at the line of scrimmage. That's just the way it works.
I talked with Sean McDermott about this briefly yesterday, though, and there's this, too, to consider, Steve. Apparently, McDermott raised the issue with the referees at the game that whistles were blown, that several players said they heard the play blown dead on the field, so the effort stops, and it was after that, they believe, that he was able to reach it out there and get the first down. McDermott, I believe, told the official before the replay, make sure they know in New York when they replay this that people heard whistles. And he goes, yeah, I'll make sure. It turns out they didn't. McDermott claims that his players.
I get it. I get that.
Yeah, McDermott
did
claims.
Did you watch it real time and go back and listen to the whistle? Did he? The whistle blow?
I wasn't looking for it. Yeah. I mean, I watched the game back over on tape, and yeah. I wasn't aware of that. Yeah. I didn't hear a whistle, but I might go back.
I have to go back and look at it, too.
He says that his players claim the whistle was blown, which is why well, they stopped.
Claim a lot of things. I mean, I love our guys as much as anybody. Right. I'd be saying the same thing.
Here's a call about replay from Terry in Attica, New York. Hi, Terry.
Yes, Steve, this is for you. Does every game have the same amount of cameras and the same angles at every game, or are there different cameras or different angles, or are they all the same?
They are not all the same, and that's a great point. You're right. A game like with Jim Nance and Tony Romo doing the game will have probably more than double the cameras that a game that we would do, like, say, the game we had in Chicago for the Cleveland-Chicago game, Cleveland Browns and the Chicago Bears game that we did. They'll have many more angles, many more opportunities to get the crucial angle for a replay that some games will not get. And that's one of the big issues that, you know, that comes up in these replay debates. Now, there is a minimum number of cameras that you can have at a game, and every game has those.
Was there like 7 or 8?
It's 8, I think. Yeah. And then, but for a big game, and certainly for like a Super Bowl and playoff games, you're going to get upwards of 25 to 30 cameras at those games. And there's some of these stadiums, and for instance, Cleveland is a stadium that is outfitted itself with 360 eye vision, which means they can spin the thing from 360 degrees, but that's stadium operated. It's not for broadcast. Now, we can clip it and pull it and stick it onto our broadcast, but we don't have control of those cameras. So, yeah, there's a huge discrepancy over what some games are able to bring to replay for review and what other games are bringing. That's a big inequity depending on what – you know, how big your audience is.
Hey, the Bills have wrapped up practice, did about 40 minutes or so ago. Tyrod Taylor met with the media after practice and got a portion of his news conference coming up right here, including a question about whether he and his former teammate Joe Flacco have talked at all this week about, you know, one of the two of them might get bumped out of the playoffs this Sunday. Here's what Tyrod Taylor had in response to that.
Oh, no. Nah. I talked to Joe a couple weeks ago, but it wasn't about the scenario that we're in now. I pretty much just focus on taking care of business throughout the week and going out and doing whatever it takes to get a win this week.
Tyrod, your numbers against Miami have been maybe the best in your career against an opponent. What is it about playing against them that seems to bring out the best in you?
I don't know if I could pinpoint what exactly causes that. I mean, definitely a team that I like to play against, but I mean, they're a talented group. Of course, they're in our division, and anytime you get a chance to play against a team twice, you definitely know those guys. It's a big rivalry game for us, so everyone gets pumped up for that game, and myself included.
I know Coach Dennison was down on the sidelines again. I think
last week. Was that a request by you, or how did that all work out? What was his decision making there?
I'm not sure what weighed in on that decision. He told us the night before the game that he was going to be down on the sideline, and the decision that he went with, it doesn't necessarily bother me, or I'm cool with it whether he's up in the booth or down on the field.
Between offensive series, you would think it'd be human nature just to maybe take a peek at the scoreboard to see what the Ravens are going, what the Chargers, since all the games are going on at the same time. Sean said, I'm telling Coach I won't look, but he said, I probably will.
I probably won't. Well, it's not that I probably won't. I won't look up. More so just focus on the game, because the scenarios that are out there, the best scenario is when we win. So we have to focus on winning the game and let everything else take care of itself.
You won't look at the scoreboard, but there's
I won't force myself not to look at the scoreboard, but I'm not necessarily worried about that.
There's so many other players on the field. As a quarterback, in terms of leading the team, how do you get them focused and centered on the game at hand and not wandering eyes?
Everyone knows what's at stake, and everyone knows that we need our best performance this Sunday, and we're preparing that way this week. As far as on the game, on game day, if you look up or if you don't, we still have a job to do, and that's where your focus needs to be. And I believe that's where everyone's focus would be.
Tyron, 2 years ago, you guys were the spoilers for the Jets for the situation you're in now. Can you take anything from what worked for you guys that day and know what to do in the other direction to prevent Miami from spoiling your shot this weekend?
Execution, that's what it boils down to. Play in and play out, everyone landed out on the line for one another. For the community, for the families, and just going out there and playing our style of football. Like I said, we understand how big of a game this is, and we're excited for the opportunity.
How much thought have you given your future beyond this game here at Buffalo?
I haven't thought much about it. Focused on a great lunch today after practice, and I focus on great meetings after that.
Is there more juice just because of the fact that this is a meaningful game here in Week 17? That hasn't happened here in a long time. Can you sense the vibe in the locker room? There's more juice for this thing with what's on the line?
Absolutely. I mean, as a competitor, it's a great opportunity for us to rise to the occasion as a team, individually. Meaningful football, I've said this a couple times this year, meaningful football in December, and especially the last week of the game, to basically take us into the playoffs. And it boils down, like I said, to us executing and us going out there and playing our best game. And I'm excited for the opportunity, as well as all the guys in the locker room excited, as well as the coaches. And we're taking it day by day until we get there and lay it out on the field.
The coaches and the offensive coaches and players kind of talked to them. I mean, that last game against Miami, you guys punch them in the mouth early, and then, you had a little struggle in the second half. Have you guys talked the last couple of weeks about kind of trying to sustain that or maybe make better adjustments? I don't know what it is. You tell me.
Absolutely. We've talked about it. Just had to have that killer instinct is what it boils down to be able to finish teams and put teams away. We had an opportunity to do that in the first game against them, and we didn't close it out the way that we want to. We've had a couple times throughout this year where we have closed out in a fashion that we like, and we haven't. But this game is definitely key for one of those points to be able to start fast and finish strong.
You guys need some other things to happen to get in. Do you go into this with the mindset of this is a playoff game essentially? I mean, if you lose, you're basically out. If you win, there's a chance you advance. It's a little different, but is that the mindset of you guys going in?
Definitely a mindset. Like you said, it's a playoff game for us. Like you said, we have to win in order for us to set ourselves up to get a chance to go into the playoffs, and that's where our focus is at.
What steps forward do you feel like this team has taken, whether it be on the field or in the locker room, regardless of whether you make the playoffs or don't? What steps forward do you feel like this team has taken, regardless of whether you make the playoffs or don't, whether that's on the field or in the locker room, under Sean McDermott?
I think we've progressed in a lot of different ways. Of course, our goal is first and foremost is to get to the playoffs and go far into the playoffs. I just think over this past year, this team has been through a bunch, transactions-wise, and just emotionally, we've been put through the test. And I think just this team have definitely stayed strong and been able to continue to fight for each other and continue to play well and put ourselves in a position where we've taken another step from the years past.
Are you looking forward to 70-plus degree weather to throw the ball in instead of what you've had the last few weeks?
Football is football. I can't control the conditions. Of course, it's always nice to play in that weather, but I enjoy playing in the cold as well, too. I embrace the weather that we have here. It's cold, but everywhere can't be 80 degrees and sunny and shiny. So we embrace home games as well as we love going to play away as well.
Tyrod Taylor meeting with the media earlier on this hour. And you're right. You know, I used to think it was a disadvantage. Oh, the Bills got to go to Miami in December. That'll be tough. You're telling me players like that, right?
Yeah, it's great. It's like a little vacation, you know. You get to play football like you haven't played in like 6 weeks. You know? I mean, it's, you get a chance to play in just a T-shirt and your pads and your one pair of socks instead of, you know.
Heat, not an issue. Not
no,
a problem.
No.
Conditioning, no, nothing?
Oh, no, you're
I mean, how about playing in September when it's 90 degrees there as opposed to 78, 79 this
That's week? Worse, you know, yeah. Not better. But then again, in September, you're just coming out of training camp, so right. You're like, you know, you're like as sharp as a razor blade then. Yeah. Nothing can hurt you.
All right, we're going to take a break. We've got more to come, including your phone calls, your thoughts on whatever about the Buffalo Bills. What possible playoff scenario you think is most likely for them to get in, provided they win, beat the Dolphins on Sunday? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show with Steve Tasker as co-host. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
John Murphy and Steve Tasker. Steve is in for Donald Jones. He'll be back next Tuesday when we resume the show. I want to squeeze in one more phone call. This guy's been waiting for a while. Otto in Pleasantville, New York. Otto, where is Pleasantville? Refresh my memory. I've heard of it.
It is in Westchester County, just above New York City.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Part of Jets country, so I get a lot of ribbing for being a Bills fan.
Yeah, how'd you become a Bills fan, Otto?
O.J. Simpson playing in the snow, watching them on television as a kid, having been up in Buffalo a couple times over the summer, just thinking it was the most absolutely amazing way to play football. And so I got hooked with you guys back then in 74, I think it was, and been calling myself a Bills fan ever since. So
that's
long
great.
Long road.
That's great.
There you go.
That's great.
So I just wanted to say, because you guys get a whole bunch of different calls, I just want to say I'm very excited for the Bills right now. And it goes back to what Murph, you've been saying, Donald's been saying, Steve's been saying, everyone's been saying on this show about playing meaningful football in December. And I really feel that we are playing meaningful football. We're going into the last week of the regular season, and we have a game that actually matters. And that all comes down to Coach McDermott, who he's the reason why I'm very excited. He brings with him a culture that has been much needed for so long. And if you look at where we were just a year ago, we were firing Rex Ryan. And Rex has a football pedigree, but I think his Achilles heel is he plays favorites with players, whereas Coach McDermott talks about the entire team, everybody. You all raise up together. And that team mentality, I think, is what we've been missing. And I think it is the quintessential part of a winning franchise. And I think, Steve, you could speak to this, where everyone in that locker room feels like you're all rowing in the same direction. That's what makes championship teams long-term. So that's what I had to say, that I'm very excited. Win or lose, I want to get in the playoffs. I want to do go all the way. But most importantly, I'm excited for the trajectory we're heading on, which is due to Coach McDermott. And I'd just like to say before I get off, Steve, yesterday someone brought up you in the Hall of Fame consideration. You were very humble in your answer, but it would be so nice to see you considered and so nice to get in because you were so awesome for so many years. That's it.
Thanks. Great call, Otto. Thank you, Otto.
New year.
Thanks, Otto. Appreciate it.
Let me start. He's right about a lot of the way I think about this team and this season in particular, which is not over yet, which is important because it's not over. There's a chance to be in the playoffs here. But regardless of what happened Sunday against Miami. And I know this team wants to win and get to the postseason. They want desperately to do that. There's been significant progress that Otto has pointed out in changing the culture. You know, there's a reason. You've pointed this out. There's a reason why some of the talent that was shown the door here is not here anymore. You know, it's culture building. It's team building. It's getting buy-in, the total buy-in from players. They didn't see that in some of those guys, talented guys, some of them, and they let them go and replace them with others. Again, the story of the 2017 season is not yet written, but when it is, part of the story, maybe the theme of the story will be, look what was accomplished here with the start of a new culture being built, with a makeover of the roster, an entirely new coaching staff, a new football department, and, oh, by the way, they either made the playoffs or came darn close to making the playoffs. To me, that's going to be a pretty successful season.
The thing about this season is they traded away some very good players. In fact, they traded away a lot of fans' favorite players. Here's the thing. A lot of coaches throughout the years and GMs and front offices were not willing to make difficult decisions based on their beliefs about what it took to make a sustainably good football team. Obviously, Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean are willing to make very difficult decisions and say goodbye to some very talented players because they did not fit what the vision for this football team was. To this point, I think it's very hard to argue with the results, even though you say, hey, they're not in the play. Listen, this is a team that was expected to win four games. They were accused of tanking it in the first week or two of the season. That has proven to be laughable, given the way they've played at certain situations and consistently throughout the league. Certainly they went through some tough stretches in this year, but this is a team that has made tough decisions, unpopular decisions, and lived with it, and not all of them worked out. You can point strictly to the Nathan Peterman decision that didn't work out. But I'll tell you what, they got the courage to make them, and for the most part, in vast majority of those instances, they have been proven absolutely correct. Not in all of them, but in a lot of the unpopular ones concerning players, they were proven to be absolutely correct, and I think they've warranted a lot of leeway and won a lot of people over for that, yeah, that willingness to do that.
All right, a break here. We'll come back. Thurman Thomas is going to join us in the next hour. We'll hear from LeSean McCoy and his comments post-practice today. All of that coming up in the final hour of the show. Come on back to John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Update from One Bills Drive. Bills practice ended just about an hour ago. They practiced indoors in the Ad Pro Sports Training Center. No practice today for four Buffalo Bills, including wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin, still nursing that knee injury that he has for a couple of weeks. Also not practicing today, defensive tackle Kyle Williams with his groin injury, cornerback Sharice Wright in concussion protocol. Offensive lineman Ryan Groy missed practice today. He's got an illness. Limited work today for cornerback E.J. Gaines, who missed last week with his knee. Limited work today for tight end Charles Clay. There were new Bills on the field at practice today. Three additions to the roster made yesterday. Three players called up from the practice squad yesterday, including wide receiver Malachi Dupree, running back Marcus Murphy, and defensive tackle Ricky Hadley. All of them on the 53-man roster now. The Bills put wide receiver Andre Holmes and running back Travaris Cadet on injured reserve to make room, and they also released defensive tackle DeAndre Coleman. The Bills and the Dolphins, the regular season finale on Sunday, 4:25 p.m. at Hard Rock Stadium outside Miami. The forecast calling for 79 degrees and partly cloudy skies. Jeff Triplett is the referee for the Bills in Miami coming up on Sunday. Well, Chiefs fans are finally going to get a look at first-round quarterback Patrick Mahomes. Chiefs coach Andy Reid announcing today that Mahomes will get the nod at quarterback in their regular season finale against the Denver Broncos. Mahomes was the 10th overall pick in the draft. Kansas City clinched a playoff berth with their victory over Miami last Sunday, which makes the result of the Denver game moot, and Patrick Mahomes will get the start. Doug Marrone says he is all in. His Jacksonville Jaguars, locked into the number 3 seed in the AFC, will play everybody in order to try to beat the Tennessee Titans. Make no mistake about it, Marrone said, we're going to play to win, and we're going to do everything possible to win the game, period. The Rams may rest their starters for their regular season finale against San Francisco. First-year head coach Sean McVay says the Rams, who have clinched the division title, want to keep players fresh for the NFC playoffs. And the Sabres back in action tonight. They head to Brooklyn as they face the Islanders in the Barclays Center. That is the update from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy in studio with Steve Tasker, Bills Wall of Famer from the NFL on CBS, in for the vacationing Donald Jones, and joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Happy to have Hall of Famer with us, Bills running back Thurman Thomas on the line with us from Florida. Thurman, what are you doing down in Florida?
I told you last week I was bringing my son down here for a baseball camp.
A Christmas baseball camp?
Yeah, it's just a regular baseball camp where a lot of the kids come from California, Florida, Texas, Georgia, okay. All over the place. So like 500 kids down here. They're going to do like their 60 time, exit velo. They're going to play about 4 or 5 games. They already got the roster set.
Wow.
So, yeah, this is one of their biggest events of the year. So we got in, and you have to get invited to it, and Lil Thurm got invited to it. So it's just him and I down here in the 70-degree weather.
Hey, Thurm, if he got invited, what are you doing there?
Well, somebody had to bring him.
You don't have to stick around. What are you doing during the day when he's out camping? What are you doing? You at the beach or what?
Probably at the beach or fishing. One of the two.
Fishing.
Did you get some fishing in, Thurm, while you're down there?
Huh?
You getting some fishing in while you're down there?
If I can.
Yeah,
it all depends on the schedule of the games and how they're played and how long they go.
Oh, all right, Thurm, I know you're on with John all the time. I don't ever listen while you're on the show. So tell me. Tell me,
boy.
Tell me what you think.
I tell you what, you should have heard Jay before he hooked me up with you guys.
Wait, let me go one step further. Tell me about this game this weekend between the Bills and your old team.
Oh, God, Lee, boy. I'm excited about it. I'm actually, we're all going, me and my family and a couple other people, Paul Lavullo and his family. So it's exciting. I mean, it's the last game of the year and everything's on the table. Obviously, we need some things to happen, but when was the last time you can say, wow, week 17 and we still got a chance?
Yeah, Thurm, I got one thing. Tell me about, we've been having a little conversation about, you know, now you get to the end of this and whether it is the end of the season or if it's not the end of the season. We were just talking a minute ago about some of all the decisions that the Bills have made, you know, with Sammy, Sammy Watkins, with Robert Wood letting him go, with Matt Darby, with
Marcel Darius,
with Reggie Ragland, bringing in, you know, Jordan Matthews, Kelvin Benjamin, E.J. Gaines, you know, making all these changes and then making the switch at quarterback halfway through the season in L.A. All these big decisions that Sean McDermott and the Bills have made, for the most part, have been, you know, in my opinion, pretty darn good ones. What, you know, look back at this season now, and like I said, we don't know if it's actually over yet or not, but what do you think about all of the big things that they've had the guts to do, both popular and unpopular decisions?
Well, you know what? It's a change that I think a lot of players and maybe a lot of fans, they weren't expecting this to happen from a first-year coach to do all those things. And to be honest with you, I wasn't thinking that way either. But all the moves that him and Bean have made, they have been positive for this football team. Now, I will say, yes, some have been not popular with the fans and probably not popular with some of the players, but you look at where he has this football team right now. I'm really kind of more excited, yes, about Sunday, but I'm kind of more excited about what's the coming year, what's coming up next year. You know, what the players they're going to get in the draft, free agent players. Because if you look at this roster up and down, I mean, did you really think that they can get 8 wins? Probably not, after all the trades and everything. So I'm excited about it. You know, like I said, there are some growing pains, and, you know, it's McDermott, it's his first year as a head coach, and obviously I think we should just wait until after the season to really throw everything out there to see, you know, what went wrong and how we can improve as a football team. But overall, Steve, I think they've done a great job. Players have learned the system very, very fast, and I tell you what, it's it's exciting to be in this position, and hopefully they can do it, and hopefully they'll make the playoffs this Sunday.
We're on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with Thurman Thomas, and Steve Tasker's in studio with us. I got a question for both of you, Steve and Thurman. You were both at the famous summit meeting last spring, right, with Sean McDermott when he called in basically the Super Bowl-era standouts, you two, I think Jim, who else, Daryl Talley, Bruce Smith. Cornelius Bennett. You're both there, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Thurm, let me start with you, Thurm. Was there anything that Sean McDermott said to you that night, and I know it was a pretty extensive night, that you've seen kind of – no, I don't mean anything by that, but just that it was a serious conversation.
Sure.
Was there anything he said that night that you have seen come to fruition during the course of this year that you thought, huh, that's exactly what he was talking about last spring when we met?
Wow, you put me on the spot there. I really can't. I really can't because I think some of the things that we did talk, I mean, that whole night, he was taking notes. And whatever notes that he took down that night, I really can't see if it happened,
right,
you know, throughout the season or in a particular game. But I do know one thing that, you know, he was, I mean, even at that night, you know, he was kind of command of the table at night. I mean, being around a, you know, bunch of guys that kind of like the spotlight and want to talk all the time after Bruce. But, I mean, he was out front. He was very outspoken about a lot of things. And I think the way that he spoke to us that night has been the way that he has spoken the entire year. Yeah, it may have been some things that people kind of listened to what he said and might have kind of taken it the wrong way. But I tell you what, that night that he was talking to us, man, he's been that way throughout the entire football season from training camp all the way to now. And I'll continue to support him, and I'm sure he'll get better at doing things as this year goes by. I mean, it's a first-year coach, head coach, and coming into something like this, haven't been into the playoffs in 17 years, yeah, that's a lot of pressure on you. But I think he's done a magnificent job of handling everything so far.
What do you think, Steve? Anything you recall from that meeting?
No, I mean, he did say, at this point, and rightfully so, this was in February we were talking about, so he hadn't even got a chance to meet with his club as a whole. And from the time where we had that meeting, almost 25 of the 50 players of the roster were churned over. I mean, they were all new players. But he goes, I really, there's no telling how many games we're going to win this year. But I know this, at the end of this season, you're going to have a real good sense of where this team's headed, where we're, what our plan is. And we're going to start to look like we're going to look. And you'll be able to see what we're trying to get to. And I think that's very true. And I related that before on your show, Murph, where it is taking shape a lot like he envisioned it would when he was around that table. And, you know, you didn't know exactly what it was going to look like or how successful it was going to be in this first year, but you were going to get a sense of a different feel around this football team, and I think that's very true.
We're on the line with Thurman Thomas, Bills Hall of Famer, Steve Tasker in studio with us. Thurman, I assume you are aware and watched the Bills game in New England last Sunday and all the controversy about the Kelvin Benjamin touchdown. Do you have anything you'd like to share with us about that that you is suitable for a family audience?
No, I hate the Patriots.
Let's start there, okay.
Yeah, I really do. I mean, Dan, you know what? Okay, first, I thought it was a touchdown, right, no matter what anybody says. But then, if you go throughout the year, and there have been plays in the season, I think it was maybe the first or the third game of the season where they had the same scenario,
Jets,
with the Texans, and Cooks caught the ball out in the end zone, had 2 feet down, came down, the ball came loose, and they called it a touchdown. And then there was another, well, obviously with the Pittsburgh Steelers a couple of weeks ago and with the Jets. You know, there's been calls that have gone their way. And, it's just to a point. Now, John and Steve, I just don't even like talking about them anymore.
Yeah.
How does that work, though?
I'm with it. I mean, did you hear, too? And, I mean, here's the thing. Because I'll get nasty about it. But yeah,
right.
To me, the two guys that did the job that was done on Sunday in New York were Dean Blandino was doing it last year and the year before, and Mike Pereira was the guy who began this whole process when he'd come on and they would talk about it. When they started to go to replay and they got to the point where, listen, we want one guy in New York making every call so they're all going to be the same. Well, the top two guys they had doing it have all been hired away by the broadcast media. Now they got the third guy doing it who, he's the third choice.
Yeah.
And he missed it. I think there's no question they missed this, and they're overthinking it. It was a crazy call not to be upheld at the very least, if not confirmed. And, you know, I just – it's a mistake. And I'm not saying – and I'm not even saying that would have made a big difference in the game, but I'll tell you this, that game would have changed right in that moment, and you'll never know what kind of effect right. it has. So you can say whatever you want to. The Bills got blown out by 20 points or whatever, 21 points. That's fine. Right. But they wouldn't have been 21 points. It would have been 17 points. And you right. can say whatever you want. Those touchdowns matter to the guys who are making them. They matter to the fans. They matter in the moment of that game, and things. There's a ripple effect that happens. You can say they wouldn't have won that game. They might not have. But even if the game was 33-32, it's a different outcome than it was 33-16.
Yeah.
And I don't. I think it's wrong to say that it didn't matter in the big scheme of things, because it could have mattered greatly, and we'll never know if it would have mattered greatly. That's the whole point of instant replay. Get it right at the time you're supposed to get it right so that the game can progress the way it should progress.
Hey, Thurman, I got a question for you, though, about
I
this.
I shouldn't have got into that.
No, that's all right.
I should have let it go.
I should have never brought this up. Donald and I had a disagreement late last week about, I think Donald's statement was the Patriots always get all the calls. Well, certainly they got that one. Well, how does that work in the league office? I mean, they're looking at it, and at some point does Riveron or somebody there says, well, it is the Patriots. We should give it to them.
No.
Does it work like that? I mean, how do you posit? How do you put forth the theory that the Patriots?
Don't ask Thurman that. He hates the Patriots. He's not going to say. He's going to say, of course, that's how.
Somebody tell me how does it work?
They don't listen. Alberto Riveron is an official. If you talk to these officials for any length of time, you'll get the sense that they truly don't look at the uniforms at all. They do not care.
I agree.
They do not care.
Yeah,
they want their focus.
I'm with you guys
yeah.
on that. I don't think they care. It's just
the focus just is happens. On getting it right.
Yeah, it just happens at the worst time sometimes for Bills fans and Bills players and stuff.
Yeah, well, it's never a good time for that.
That's probably the only thing. Yeah.
But I'm with you. They're focused on getting it right, and they're bummed when they don't, and it bothers them. So, and that's why they get to the NFL. They officiate high school games, small college or junior community college games, then Division II, Division I games. They go up through the ranks, and their mentality and the way they view athletic competition, particularly in their sport, changes because of the training they get as they rise through the ranks. They are focused on getting the calls right, not on the color of the uniforms of which they're calling. I promise you that. And that's I hate to admit that, because you see them and you want to kill these guys for making a mistake. But it's
right.
really the way it is. And I got nothing but respect for them, even though I was the first guy in line to rip them when I was playing. I was I love doing it, too.
Well,
I mean, I don't
right.
kid
well, I know there's only one guy in this conversation who's been thrown out of a game for touching an
right.
official.
Right, exactly. At the beginning of the game of his last game.
Probably saved me a broken leg. They still apologize to me for it too. Every time they see me there, I'm sorry. There was a bad call. That's the only time I actually probably was the victim of a bad call with my last.
Wow.
Everything else they kind of got right.
You went out with
even
a bang.
Even the call that I was beefing, they were right. I was wrong.
You went out with a bang.
I went out with more of a whimper.
Steve is in studio with us. Thurman Thomas is on the line. As you said, you're going over to the game on Sunday in Miami. There's likely, given what the Dolphins have left to play for and what's at stake for the Bills, that's likely to be a pro-Buffalo crowd, I would think, at Hard Rock Stadium, including you and your family, Therm, huh?
Yeah, you know what? From the people that I've been talking to down here, you know, there's really kind of nobody going to the game that I know that are Dolphins fans. I mean, it really is not. And so it should be like the 90s. It should be Rich Stadium, well, New Era Field South now.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to actually coming down here on the plane. We saw a couple of Bills fans and had a chance to talk to them. And so there's going to be a very good amount of Bills fans down here, like it always is anyway.
Don't forget, Thurman, it's a 4:25 game. It's not a 1 o'clock game anymore.
Yeah, I know, and that makes
it kills you, doesn't it?
It really does.
Because you can't catch a flight.
We were talking about this, like, oh my God! So now everybody's playing at 4:25, so we're really going to be scoreboard watching and doing all type of stuff now. So, but you know what though? It's fun though, and they should be excited for Bills fans and the Bills players that they're still in it at this point. And I wish everything can go their way. I really do.
All right, Thurman, one scenario. Say, put yourself on the sidelines of the Bills game, and you're and it's a close game, say it's 17-17 midway through the third, and you look up at the scoreboard and Baltimore's down 28-3 early in their fourth quarter of their game. Talk about what the sidelines are going to be like if you're a Bills player knowing Baltimore's getting beat and you're in a tight game with the Dolphins.
Oh, man. I mean, if that point is that, if your energy level is like you put, like, all your energy into it and you're like a 6, all of a sudden you see that score, it's like a 10 again.
Yeah.
It's like a 10 again. I mean, you're like, okay, guys, this is the time where you huddle up on that sideline and say, hey, guys, we have to get it done right now. And those are the type of players that, you know, a Kyle Williams, a LeSean McCoy, guys like that would step forward and say, hey, guys, it's right here in front of us. You know, that's the time that you step up and say something. Just like back in the day, Daryl or Jim or you or anybody would have said, hey, guys, it's our time. Let's finish off the job right now. So, I hope it's that way. I hope it's that way. So, I'm really looking forward to the game this Sunday.
I'm glad you're coming, Thurman. I think you probably bring some karma, don't you think? Some of that Super Bowl karma to Hard Rock Stadium.
You know, I just played there for a year. It's not like I'm defending. It's not like I'm.
Oh, I wasn't saying that. You know, no, that's not what I'm saying. Although is it true you're the Dolphins got you seats in the alumni suite there for the game?
No.
Wow.
No. I've never called them for anything.
Well, don't start now.
Yeah.
I won't.
All right, Thurman.
Thurman, thanks. Best of luck to Little Thurman, the tournament, and the camp down there. And hopefully we get to see you over there Sunday. Thank you.
All right, guys. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Okay. All right, man. See
Thurman Thomas, the Hall of Famer, joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway Eat Fresh from Florida. I wasn't talking about that, but he brought up the Miami thing. That bothers him. You know.
I hope it did.
You really dropped you dropped the big one on him about the that was good. That was good. That does bother.
I didn't bother. It didn't really occur to me until we got into the conversation. I thought I'd drop that on him, see what he said.
Yeah. It still bothers him, though, the fact that he played that 1 year out of spite.
I don't think so. That's the way it goes. He did the right thing.
You sure?
Yeah.
I don't know if he feels that way. And I do believe having him and his family in the stadium on Sunday will be good karma for the Bills. I mean, right? If it's all wrapped up by the time that game ends, 7:25, 7:30 on Sunday, who doesn't want to see Thurman Thomas in the Bills' locker room, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I think it'd be fantastic.
That'd be awesome. I don't know if he'd be in the locker room, but
why not? Bring him in.
That's a huge moment.
Yeah.
I haven't even really envisioned what it would be like if all the things fall and the Bills actually get in the playoffs. I don't even want to do that because for a whole generation of people, unfortunately, for a whole generation of Bills fans that live here in Buffalo and have watched this team up and down and mostly down through the last 18 years, through their whole life, don't understand what it means to get on that stage in the playoffs as a team and as a city, because your city's in the playoffs, not just the team. The city is in the – particularly here in Western New York. Buffalo gets in the playoff, and things change. Everything changes for you. It's and it's a huge, huge gift. There's no question about it. It's one that we took for granted here for a long time, and that's one that we sorely missed for a long time. I'd like, you know, you think you got a chance to having that change this year, but I do think that this is an organization and now and an administration, a coaching staff, and a movement and a regime now that is going to make that happen in the near future, if it doesn't happen this year. So I think it's exciting.
Yeah, it's coming. We believe that. All right, we're going to break. When we return, LeSean McCoy had some comments after practice today about the importance of this game on Sunday. We'll hear from him, hear from some more from you as well. The lines are open at 803-0550 and toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-552-550. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show, John Murphy and Steve Tasker. We're live at One Bills Drive. All right, when I let the cat out of the bag, your plan is to cover the Super Bowl for us, right, for a couple of days leading up to the game in Minnesota?
Yeah, we're going
to
be there
Monday
through, I don't know.
Anybody?
I've known about it for a while now. I had to clear it with my wife.
With the office, the home office? You're going to the Super Bowl in Minnesota.
We're
going to
be there Monday through Friday. Probably setting up interviews and sending them back Monday, but Wednesday, Thursday.
That week.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we'll probably have.
When's the last time you went to a Super Bowl? Was it New Orleans when you were with CBS on the sidelines?
Yeah. Because, okay. They were in San Francisco for Super Bowl 50, and I didn't go to that one.
Okay. So,
but, New Orleans, and it was – That was a long week.
Yeah, you worked hard. Well, this one, we're going to put you to work. You got stuff to do for us. Don't, you know, it's not vacation.
Listen, listen, I've seen Jay Harris. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure it's not going to be backbreaking work.
Come on, man. We're going to put you to work.
Yeah, I think what we're going to do is I guess, is going to be getting interviews and for your show during the week, and we'll be sending them back here. Hopefully, a couple of live hits
we can interact. Absolutely, and give us the vibe of the Super Bowl city, and then you can go on and enjoy Minnesota.
Radio Row.
Yeah, you can go out at night and enjoy Minnesota, Minneapolis.
It's
going to
be negative 42 degrees.
Yeah, you have done the Super Bowl in Minnesota before as a player.
Yeah,
that was brutally cold that week. Don't let anybody tell. I know it was fun. I'm sure it was fun, but
it was dangerous cold. I mean, that's really the word for it. It was dangerous. We got out of we went to the LA Kings Minnesota North Stars hockey game during the week. It was like on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. We came out of there and said, there's like five of us. Let's go down a half a block, catch a cab, you know, half a block away from the crowd. You know, we'll catch them before they get to the stadium, right? We walked a half a block, and I'm telling you, I didn't know if we were going to make it anywhere safe. I thought my ears were going to snap off my head. It was so cold. It was, my gosh.
Obviously, you had family and friends who went to Super Bowls. What did they say about the Minnesota experience? This is, you know, by the way, 25 years ago.
I cannot even remember.
Yeah.
I can't remember anything about our hotel. I remember absolutely nothing. I remember a couple of visions, brief things. That's the one where my son was on my lap after the Super Bowl, and they took a picture of him. That's the picture I associate with that Super Bowl, and that's about it.
Yeah.
That was the Redskins Super Bowl.
Yep. Steve's covering the Super Bowl for us next month. It'll be just about 4 or 5 weeks away. Whoever it is, you'll be there for the show. It'll be fun. Hey, Steve, we like to play a thing, Donald and I, every day, well, most days, called NFL True or False. Stories that are out there in the league right now, and we have to decide whether we believe them or not. So we all know what happened with the Bills game and several other games this Sunday. They moved everything to 4:25, no night game this Sunday night, and there usually is a Sunday night game. Well, Ravens coach John Harbaugh, one of those teams who had their game moved from 1 in the afternoon against Cincinnati at M&T Bank Stadium to 4:25 now against the Bengals to make sure that the games with playoff implications go on at the same time. Harbaugh's quote, "I don't think the NFL did us any favors by moving it back, but they don't care about us. We just have to care about ourselves." Harbaugh said many Baltimore fans will now be unable to attend the game since it's starting late in the afternoon on New Year's Eve. The NFL made the wrong move in Sunday's schedule change. True, false? What do you think?
Oh, I think it was dead on with the right move.
I think it's false to say that.
Yeah. That's John Harbaugh being a head coach and looking out for his guys and for his team. I mean, it's a smart move because now nobody is in or out of. They've got to play their game to win. The guys who aren't locked in, that kind of thing. You've got to play your game to win because the game that you need somebody to win or lose apart from you to get into the playoffs, like the Buffalo Bills, are going to be playing at the exact same time. So you're not going to take the field knowing the outcome of that game, and it's not going to affect the way you play. So I think the league did absolutely the right thing. Plus, taking the game off the night game because it was going to be meaningless or would be meaningless for any one of the games or teams, they're going to give NBC a game back in the next 5 years. They're going to get a payback game. I don't know what that means, but – you know, they'll certainly NBC did the right thing by saying, okay, we'll take that, and maybe they can call their shot, and maybe they gave them a little freedom to pick a good game. But I think it's absolutely the right thing for the league to do, and I'm all for
it.
It
is the right
all
thing.
For it.
Yeah, me too. It's the right thing. It's not the wrong thing. It's the right thing. I say false. NFL True or False Part 2. MVP in the league. Todd Gurley, MVP candidate from the Los Angeles Rams. Is he the MVP? Does he deserve it? What about Carson Wentz? What about Tom Brady? What about Rob Gronkowski, who Polian said the other day should be the MVP? Gurley deserves the NFL Most Valuable Player. Great year. But, no, I would go with somebody else, Brady or Gronkowski, for my MVP. What do you think, Steve?
No, Todd Gurley's not the MVP. Good player, no question about it, on a team that has surprised a lot of people. But being a surprise team with a good player, and that good player had, you know, leading the league in rushing. But no, he's not the MVP. Absolutely not. In fact, I don't think in this day and age, unless I think it's hard for a running back, a guy at that position, or anybody that does not play quarterback, to win the MVP. Why isn't his quarterback in the NFL MVP conversation?
Right.
I mean, that's the more important role to that team.
Right.
And he was there last year and couldn't play.
Some people make a pretty strong argument, though, that the MVP has sort of devolved into who's the best quarterback in the league, which I think would be a mistake. I don't look at it that way, but you can make that argument that you just look for the quarterback of the most successful team, the guy who's had the good year, the big numbers, and he's your MVP. I think that you can almost say that that's the way they've been chosen.
Yeah, well, that's the way it is. You can complain about it all you want, but that's for me, that's who it's going to end up being. It's going to be the best quarterback on the best team. Or the quarterback of the best team. It's a little bit like the Heisman Trophy. You go to the best player on the best team, and that's who gets it.
NFL True or False Part 3. So James Harrison is now a New England Patriot. That happened yesterday. Over a span of 4 days, he went from the Pittsburgh Steelers, where he really made his bones, to the New England Patriots. Had a picture taken in the locker room with his new quarterback, Tom Brady. Now, Mike Tomlin said he just needed a roster spot, wanted to keep other players, but they let him go, and he signed with New England over a couple of days. The Steelers say big deal. They're not worried. The Steelers not concerned with James Harrison as a Patriot. Many people think that's, you know, they're on a collision course for the AFC title, or at least an AFC playoff game between those two. I think concerned, I don't know. I mean, you make your decisions based on what you need on the roster, and James Harrison's playing time has been pretty limited, but I would disagree. I say false. They have to be a little concerned that they might have to go against, you know, the old veteran James Harrison in a very important, meaningful playoff game.
I think they're not
down in and down out, by the way, but enough to make a difference.
Maybe. I think they're not concerned right now because so much has to happen for them to get back around to them. They're not concerned with it now. And on the day of the game, that's going to be disconcerting for the Pittsburgh Steelers to line up and look across there or be in pregame warm-up with James Harrison wearing 92 in a different jersey color. I think there's no question that'll be a concern then. Right now, they've got bigger things to be concerned about. They've got to get into the playoffs, win a couple of playoff games, and then get to New England to play them again. And if they do get to New England, then, yeah.
It'll be a huge story.
It'll be a huge story, and it will be a concern because James Harrison is a bad man, and I'm telling you, and I had this. Remember, the Bills fans will remember this. Remember back in 2001 or two, maybe 2003, the Buffalo Bills acquired Lawyer Malloy on Monday after he was cut by the Patriots on Sunday, or picked him up on Tuesday after he was cut on Monday. He started opening week, the opening day against the Patriots, against his old team that he was with just a week or two before. And had been with them for a long time. And the Bills absolutely crushed the New England Patriots 31-0. That was the Sam Adams fumble recovery touchdown game. Bright sunshine. And then at the end of the year, in week 17, the Patriots returned the favor by beating the Bills 31-0. But that the fact that Lawyer Malloy was on the field for the team that he played so well for so long, totally, totally ravaged the Patriots emotionally, in my opinion. And they didn't play well at all. And I think the Steelers run the risk of having that happen to them with James Harrison in the playoffs.
There you go. NFL True or False presented by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. The Bills now an hour and a half or so off the practice field. They started at 11, finished up a little bit after 1 o'clock. A lot of attention focused on 12-year veteran Kyle Williams, whose contract is up at the end of the year. Will it be his last season in a Bills uniform? I don't know that. I don't know if anybody knows that, but people are speculating about that. But Kyle Williams in the locker room moments ago was asked if it's important to him not to define his career and finish his career without one playoff appearance. Here's what he had to say.
Anytime that you're a part of a team long enough that, you know, the successes and the failures, you don't want to, you know, define you. You want it to be the relationships and things like that. But, you know, at the same time, like I said, there's 53-plus guys in here that, you know, are working for a common goal. They've put a ton of work in, and it's about, you know, it's about our team. It's about our organization more than anything.
What was it about this city and this team that made you re-sign after years of not going to the playoffs instead of chasing a different team?
Well, I'm a pretty loyal guy, I'd like to think, and everybody had an opportunity to let me come in and play football four times over. Now, I was the first overall pick of the fifth round, so there is a lot of pressure that comes with that. You know, us number one overall picks, you know, but it's more about a, you know, a kindred spirit type, you know, identifying with the people, loving the fans, you know, coming from a very passionate place that I played college football and literally stepping into what I think is its equal in the NFL level.
Leslie said that you haven't slowed down. If you want to play, you can play. I mean, it's really going to come down to that. Is that hearing that from your defensive coordinator, knowing that he still feels that way about you and they feel that way about you, is that great to hear?
Sure. I mean, you know, I watch the film. I, you know, I'm tough on myself. I critique myself. I know where I'm at. I know the plays that I play well and the plays that I need to do better at. But, you know, at the same time, I can't control the future. All I'm going to worry about is today and getting ready for the Dolphins and go win one football game. And I told you guys last week or 2 weeks ago whenever we played these guys, you know, whatever the future holds, it holds, and we'll all find out together.
Cal Williams in the Buffalo locker room. Steve, I got to say, I love his approach. And look, I take a backseat to no one when it comes to appreciation of Kyle Williams' career, what he's meant to this franchise through some very difficult years, what a warrior he's been. But he can still play based on what I've seen this year. Now, he's got a contract that will have to be settled up. Look, if he doesn't come back to Buffalo next year, then add that to the list of holes that they're going to have to plug because he is an important part of this defense. And, you know, as sentimental as you might get about maybe it's his last game, maybe it's not, but if it's going to be his last game in the Bills uniform, you're going to have to find somebody to replace him.
No question about it, and it comes down to the fact that, you know, our, and for me and for most players and guys that played, you always just look at yourself and about guys that are going to come back and not going to come back, and you think, well, are we better with him or without him?
Mm-hmm.
You're better with him in a lot of ways that go beyond the fact that he can get, you know, 2 years ago he got double-digit sacks from the defensive tackle position. So, he's a guy that you don't want to say goodbye to. I don't think at any level.
And I think in some ways we're jumping the gun a little bit with these questions, and I love his response about, hey, I'm focused on beating Miami. You know, I don't blame, but there's plenty of, you did this, you went through this, plenty of time to entertain your options and figure out, am I coming back, am I not? You don't have to go. Did you go into your last game against Green Bay that day thinking, this is it, I'm pulling the plug, I'm done after this?
Yeah, I'd retired the week before. I'd announced my retirement the week before last home game.
Yeah,
they knew that was my last game. I didn't want to wait. I said, listen, it's been great, but you know, I'm done, and I just want to do it. And I did it because I didn't want to announce it, but Jim Kelly was doing our game from the booth, and he said he was going to announce it if I didn't announce. I was like, dude. Because he's, you know, I was like, all right, so, you know, Birch told the guy in the PR department, said, well, okay, we'll set up. So we announced it the Saturday before
the last home game.
I didn't want it to come out in the, you know, I wanted to announce it. I didn't want Jim to announce it.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, so I announced it.
I do remember that way now.
It was, yeah. So that was crazy.
We'll see how it plays out. I hope Kyle gets to play Sunday and next week and as long as this season goes and as long as he wants. I mean, like I said, I appreciate that career and what he's meant and what he's done, but I think we're a little premature, and the obituary doesn't have to be written now.
Well, here's the thing, too, and if they want Kyle back, certainly they could put a number out there that would get him back. And if Kyle, you know, wants to come back, he certainly just says all he has to do is say, I want to come back.
Right.
And they will give him a contract. The number is what they still have to negotiate. Kyle has to look down and look at his family and say, okay, can I go play one more year for veteran minimum?
Yeah.
Or can I go back in 1 year and play for this number or that number? Certainly he's making a good buck now because he's on a contract that he earned through, you know, a lot of years of service. I mean, he's making a good number right now. If he comes back for a lesser number, then, you know, would he be willing to do that? It's hard to say, and he has to talk to his family about it. And it's a decision every player makes.
Yep. All right, we're back with more in a moment. Steve Tasker with us this today and tomorrow. We're back with more on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, and the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Sean McDermott met with the media earlier today, and the head coach of the Buffalo Bills had a variety of things to talk about, including this. Knowing that you're one win away from the playoffs, does that alter your long-term goals and aspirations for the franchise? Here's what Sean McDermott answered to that.
I know emotionally, I'll just take that separately for a second, what it means to the people of this great city. And there's a lot that goes along with that. The part of building this team the right way, this would be a step. And you know, as we continue to build and grow and build that solid foundation, changing the culture, changing the belief, you know, we're heading in the right direction, you know, it would be a step as we continue to grow.
Sean McDermott talking about what a clinching a playoff spot might mean to the Buffalo Bills short-term and long-term. Also on the show today, moments ago, we talked with Thurman Thomas, the Pro Football Hall of Famer. He gave us his version of the overturned touchdown, the Calvin Benjamin touchdown that did not survive replay review last Sunday in New England. Here's Thurman.
First, I thought it was a touchdown, right, no matter what anybody says. But then, if you go throughout the year, and there have been plays in the season, I think it was maybe the first or the third game of the season where they had the same scenario,
yes,
with the Texans and Cooks caught the ball out of in the end zone, had 2 feet down, came down, the ball came loose, and they called him a touchdown. And then there was another, well, obviously with the Pittsburgh Steelers a couple of weeks ago, and with the Jets, you know, there's been calls that have gone their way. And, it's just to a point now, John and Steve, like, I just don't even like talking about them anymore.
No one likes talking about it anymore. It happened. It's gone. Would it have affected the outcome of the game? Unlikely. The final outcome, win or lose, Patriots lose if the
unlikely,
Bills get that touchdown.
Unlikely, but the thing I said earlier, you never know.
Right, you don't know. I know.
You don't know. You know what happened.
Yeah, the object is that it doesn't happen again. I think we've turned the page a little bit, Steve, and just from listening to players in the locker room and some of our calls, people are beginning to get the sense that this is a real-life game coming up on Sunday and a real-life chance to do the best you can to clinch a playoff spot. That's pretty big for this franchise.
Yeah, it is, and to have it going with, you know, it's not 16 things have to happen.
Right.
One other team has to lose, and or two other teams have to lose, and you're in if you can get the win. And that's something that's as close as this organization's been for a long, long time, and it feels pretty good.
It does feel good. Steve is back tomorrow. Thank you for this today, and we'll get you back in here tomorrow. We've got a good show coming up tomorrow. Joe Rose, former Dolphins tight end, part of their radio broadcast team, will join us. Is he your era? Do you recall? Is he about your age?
Yeah. I've been on his program a couple of times. If we're doing their games in the booth, he'll call me and I'll go on his show.
Yeah. So. Good guy. He'll be with us tomorrow at 12:30. Micah Hyde scheduled to join us after practice tomorrow, the Bills Pro Bowl safety. And 2 o'clock, Reuben Brown will join us, a former teammate of yours again. Reuben.
Yeah.
All of that coming up tomorrow. Steve will be back with us tomorrow as Donald continues his vacation. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistants from George Blast, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, Shelby Rush, and our producer is Jay Harris. Thanks to Steve. Thanks to you for watching. We'll see you tomorrow at noon with the newest installment of the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.